The public hearing on the 2015-2016 budget will now come to order. Mrs. Moak, roll call, please.
Mr. Buckles?
Here.
Mrs. Clark?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Elder? Mr. Bojanski?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here. Welcome, everybody. The 2015-2016 budget has been on file and conveniently available for public inspection beginning June 23, 2015. Notice for the public hearing on the budget was published on June 25, 2015 in the Glen Allen News. To date, the district has not received any verbal or written comments on the 2015-2016 budget. Is there anyone present who wishes to provide public comment? Okay. Mr. Cooper?
Yes, I want to bring up something that does not seem to be addressed in this year's budget and hasn't been the last couple of budgets. 2 years ago, at the June 10th meeting in 2014, a motion was passed to go ahead and hire two new assistant principals. One of those positions, quoting me from that meeting, was to include the subtraction of $89,000 in the 2013-14 budget to make a zero-sum gain so that it would not cost the taxpayers of the district anything to get this position on. And that $89,000 was never taken out of the budget. It was pulled out of the pocket by the administration. Last year, it was pulled out of another pocket by the administration. The taxpayers didn't see any savings at all. They didn't see a zero-sum gain. What happened was the money budgeted was budgeted, and then was taking money that was earned to put into the district pockets, which wouldn't have been spent if Carolyn had something else we spent on this. So we ended up, essentially taxpayer-wise, we ended up getting screwed for $100,000 approximately, and each year it goes up. I'm standing up to say that the board made that comment, said they were going to go ahead and do it. It was something that was being pushed through by our last superintendent. And it seems that she's accomplished what she tried to do. Let's lose these kids here, and nobody will come back. Nobody will think about it. We'll just go away. And we'll be no big deal. I'm standing here saying it's time that you guys stood up and did what you said at June 10th. And I listened to the tapes. It's on there. It's clear. I had discussions with some of you guys. It's clear. If we need part of the position, that's fine. We're budgeting money. We're finding, I wish in my life I could find pockets that have got, an extra $100,000, sitting here and there, but I can't. You guys shouldn't be able to do that either. It is my money and everybody else who lives here in the town. So, my comments. I hope that you guys this time will go ahead and think about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else who wishes to make public comment on the budget? All right, thank you very much. May I have a motion to adjourn the public hearing?
Second.
That was Patrick and then Drew. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Public hearing is now closed. The August 10th, 2015 regular meeting will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mrs. Moak, roll call, please.
Mr. Alter? Mr. Bolchinski?
Here.
Mrs. Clark?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Buckles?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session to discuss litigation when an action against, affecting, or on behalf of the particular district has been filed and is pending before a court or administrative tribunal, or when the district finds that an action is probable or imminent, in which case the basis for the finding shall be recorded and entered into the closed meeting minutes.
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Buckles?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bojanski?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. All right, thank you very much, and welcome, everybody. The board's been off for a month of July. Welcome back to everybody. School's around the corner. Welcome back to public participation. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves. Again, we are live streaming our meetings, and so we would ask that if you have public comment, if you wouldn't mind coming up to the podium, and it'll pick up on our microphones better. We've gotten some good feedback that, in fact, you can hear it. Yeah.
Don't we have to make a motion to open now?
I don't have it here.
Okay.
I think we're good.
Okay. But thank you, Joe. Thanks for checking. So please, if you wouldn't mind standing near the podium, we will be able to pick everybody up on our live stream. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, those are in the entryway, and limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. If your comments have substantially been reflected in others, we'd ask that in the interest of time, please forego making comments, but please provide the board with any copies of written material that you may have, and you can give those to Nancy Moak. Personal complaints, criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and or other interference with the orderly conduct of the business meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate D41 staff representative for a response as a response is warranted. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board at this time?
Jeff Cooper.
Mr. Cooper? Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Cooper. My comments tonight are going to be about the TRS discussion we just had. I'm going to try to keep it short and sweet here.
Mm-hmm.
A couple points. This is based on what I heard. Okay. And basically, I heard a couple things that just scratched my head on. I think the first point I wanted to make was we should separate two concepts here. The first is the taxpayers paying TRS. The second is the salaries for the people who are affected of this. The salary should have, the hiring and so on, we deal with TRS first. We get rid of taxpayers paying the TRS. That's simple. That's really not a hard concept. And if we were to find down the road that we are having a hiring problem, well, as a business owner, you adjust your salary then. But it has nothing to do with the unfair paying of this benefit that we should, as taxpayers, not be paying. So that's first. TRS, salary, they're both totally separate concepts here, items that should just be dealt with separately. Second, this really bothers me a little bit here. What word did I not hear in that whole conversation? I didn't hear the word taxpayer. Who is paying for the TRS or the assistant principals, principals, and anybody in the admin that we're paying this for? The taxpayers are, okay? I don't give a rip about Kildare. I don't give a rip about Hinsdale. They're not comparable districts to me. Now, I've been a business guy for 35, 40 years now, okay? There are things that are comparable, but it's got nothing to do with test scores and things. We're talking hiring people and people that are going to be working for us in that district. If they don't want to come and work in Glen Ellyn, well, they're missing something, because I think we cut ourselves a little bit short here. This is a great town. It's a little bit nicer than a lot of the towns around the Chicago area, and I think people are looking for a job. I think they do put that in the back of their mind. I think we're selling ourselves short if we don't use that as a thought process, as part of our thought process. Okay, so I didn't hear the word taxpayer used at all. You guys are up there because you're representing us. It's that simple. It's that simple. And I want to just make sure that I come across, and I want to be straight with this. I am up here advocating for something. I'm advocating for all the stakeholders of District 41. Because I've got something at stake. I've got a tax bill that I've got to, say, another 2 weeks, I've got to write that second check.
30 seconds.
Okay, and I'm going to be muttering some words when I write that check out. Person was up here before. She works for the district, but she's not advocating. But she's got something to lose. I understand that. My last comment is, this is nothing personal. The people who work in the district here that are getting this benefit from us, no names are ever thought of on my behalf when I was trying to go ahead and push this thing forward. It could be whoever it is that knows assistant principal, principal, and administrator. administrative expense. So it's nothing personal, but just we should be paying for it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bruce Curry.
I wanted to talk about the academic update. I know we left that back in June. What I noticed looking over the data was that, our math, in math, the risk scores, and what I was looking at was the expected growth rate. So this is, when I'm a teacher, and I get a similar readout, and you would expect over time the children to grow, just because they're living, breathing, taking in the environment, taking in schema from going places and doing things. But as a teacher, what I really emphasize and try to get to is meeting or exceeding the expected growth rate of the students I teach. And what I noticed looking at the data is, well, as a teacher, I have to meet that expected growth rate, but I would expect that growth rate after Think Tank implementation, which was a game changer, or supposed to be a game changer, to be really high. And, looking at it, it's not. But the other thing, question I had was our math. In first grade, 80% of the kids, 79.1% of the children, are meeting or exceeding their expected growth rate. It falls about 11 points in second grade. It falls another 11 points or 12 points in third grade. In fourth grade, it pops back up to about 67.4%. And in fifth grade, it goes down to 56.8%. When it hit middle school, it's at 68, 61, and 64%. After Think Tank, I would expect, I guess my question is, we said that Think Tank would be evaluated. I'd like to know what the goal is, where we would expect on the expected growth rate to hit for most of our students. And I'd also like to know, with Think Tank, when is success declared and when is defeat accepted? I don't feel like we have those metrics in place where we're systematically evaluating how we're doing on this experiment. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, presentations, report, and initiatives updates. Mr. Haynes.
Okay, so I wanted to...
Just so that I can introduce. I'm sorry, Jack. This is our summer construction update, if you can introduce yourself again.
Sure. Jack Hayes with Frederick Wayne Corporation. So the work at the four elementary schools is all substantially complete and has been inspected and passed by the ROE. So the schools are ready to occupy. There is a little remaining work that we're doing at Churchill as we get ready for move-in by Dave and the teachers and crews, getting the classroom set up. There's a little bit of landscaping left to do at Franklin, which I think is occurring right now. So basically, Franklin is done, Lincoln is done, Forest Glen is done, Churchill is done to the point where we can get it to this point as we proceed into phase three, and the Lincoln LMC renovation is also complete, pending the delivery of the final coveys. That was a delayed decision that is in progress that will be installed probably in September. So other than punch list and closeout items, the core work that was planned for and approved and executed is done with the final punch list and closeout process, which will take the next couple of months. That's really the update. Phase three, Churchill, is just getting underway and pending board action tonight. We've already started demolition and some site utilities. We'll move right into excavation and get ready for foundations.
Mm-hmm. Jack, I know some of us were at Finance Committee tonight too, but can you also just give an update on where we are with the budget?
Sure. Currently, as of the last report that we prepared, the total project budget of the original $13.7 million were $1.1 million under budget, which was essentially the contingency and savings that we started the project with has been able to be, for the most part, retained throughout all of construction. So it's schedule-wise and budget-wise, we're right on track where we wanted to be.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Jack.
Yeah, go ahead.
I had a couple items.
Yep.
One, and they may not involve you, Jack.
Okay.
So, may or may not. But from a report standpoint, I didn't notice, and maybe I missed something, are the reports don't appear to be linked to the packet on the D41 website.
To the what on the website?
To the packet on the D41 website, and how we link those. It doesn't look like those reports.
Oh, the construction update?
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
I'll look at it.
Was there would that be something that we wouldn't normally do? Or
do we link the Jack's? Are we talking about these
the
pieces?
That you got?
They would become part of the minutes when we're posting.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, that was one question. Okay. I wasn't sure about that. The other thing, it looked like Bob approved, was it 83,000? Am I getting that correct number over the summer?
There are a number of change orders that we processed over the past year. That's something that Jack presented earlier this evening at the finance meeting.
Was it 83,000?
Well, I'm not sure what you're asking.
Well,
in what's the
we gave authorization. We did not. Some of the board members, we were not up, Stephanie and I were not on the board at that time. But it looks like when I'm going through this from, you know, Bob had authorization to make approval.
For a single...
again, I wasn't here, so I'm just trying to understand. When it was under $50,000,
yeah,
that was part of the same.
A single change order under $50,000, right?
Correct. And was the number 83,000 landing that up?
I don't recall any one number in particular that was 83,000.
Okay.
Kurt, are you adding up the summer change orders?
The total debits and credits of your
but those
single so those weren't
there,
necessary.
Those happen over the course of the project. Yeah. Those aren't okay. Change orders that were done in 1 month. Those are change orders that happen
really throughout the project.
Throughout the project.
Yeah, there's an $83,000 number that is the total of
that's only one of the schools.
Franklin Elementary.
Okay.
That's one school.
And that was from the inception of the project. Going back to when did we start from?
March.
March.
Last March.
2014.
March 2014. So this $83,000 on Franklin would have been the total of individual change orders from the beginning of that project through this point in time.
Okay.
Not this summer.
No. I got you. Okay. Yes. That was what I was trying to
Yeah.
And then from that, you know, I started to look because I'm trying to understand the history. You know, I was sitting out there when all this occurred, but it looked like. As I went back, the resolution to give Bob authorization, and again, this doesn't apply to Jeff, but was occurred on May 12th of 2014. And that resolution said approval of a revised change order process for the duration of the elementary addition project. That was from page one of the minutes from 5/12/14 under other matters approved. At some point, you know, to me that's kind of vague. So at some point, you know, I mean, when does construction officially stop? When do we, is there a point where we actually take that authorization back away from Bob,
yeah,
formally? You know, so, and that's not a criticism of Bob, which is.
No, I think it was actually part of the resolution. Mm-hmm. When the projects are completed, I don't have authorization approved for the projects to be finished. So I wouldn't have authorization.
So it's a good question, though, because at that time, the current project mm-hmm. wasn't necessarily mm-hmm. in the. Wasn't a defined term, maybe it was a defined term, but this last project for the additional four at Churchill, I would propose, and we don't need to do it now, but the board considered to, so not to have this vagueness curve, to take that idea and do a resolution.
Do a separate resolution.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. the project, and you know, I could sit here and say, you were on the audience, the project was the 16 classrooms,
mm-hmm.
right? But there's now four additional ones.
But is the question focused on this is an issue around the summer because the board takes?
No, I think Kurt's off that issue, right? Because that was.
Yeah,
I just wanted to clarify
that
time
sure.
period.
From what I'm seeing in the minutes, they're fairly vague. I mean, an elementary addition project, you know, at some point I just to shore it up. For me, I think at some point when they're finished, we, you know, we should create another resolution or just take that authorization away. So that there's no vagueness. That's the only thing.
I agree, okay. But I would add another star. I think it's a good idea to get rid of it when it's all done. But when that resolution was, people can disagree with it, but when that was approved, it was a 16 classroom project, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now we have four additional classrooms.
So finance should
set what that date should be by the project completion to find it.
We should end that resolution, and we should give another resolution specific to the four classrooms that are currently contracted to be built from that fall.
I'm just saying that we should flush it all out and find it and then bring it to the board.
Yeah, bring it back to the board.
Bring a resolution. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good point. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
I have one quick question about the cubby storage at Lincoln. I just wanted to be sure. I know it sounds like those aren't going to be ready for when school starts. If school starts, is that correct?
The original, there was either two, and then we added one, or there was three sets, and we added a fourth. I can't remember what it was. But the last set that we added is not going to be ready for the start of school. That's going to be delivered, I believe, sometime in September, was part of the result of making a decision at a later point in time.
Right.
Well, and I think I wanted to clarify on that one because I know I was one who had asked about if we should use additional options, but I don't know if that question delayed it, because I think at the June 8th meeting it was just a discussion item, and then we made a decision on the 22nd.
Right.
That's when Bob gathered the info in between, so I don't know that our discussion really delayed it. It sounds like maybe it wouldn't have been ready. I mean, I don't know that we could have approved it any sooner than we did with that.
What's your concern or question?
I just wanted to be sure that, the board because as a board member, it wasn't clear that if we discuss this further, it's going to be delayed. But I don't think our discussion had anything to do with the timing. I think it was just the timing of the project that is delayed. Okay.
But they're scheduled to be in for September?
The ones that were approved, the companies that were approved on the original schedule are in and installed.
Okay.
The ones that weren't had to be...
That was added after the fact.
Yeah, there was a set that was added.
Right, that was added after
that. That was added. Those are the ones that aren't going to be...
Okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Jack.
Yep.
Discussion items.
STEM scope curriculum. Karen is going to talk to us about a new primary resource for science, and I know she has some friends who are going to be joining her.
There's some teachers here who participated in the trial that I referenced in the board report, and I'll introduce them in a minute. But science teachers had actually been waiting for a while kind of for a new curriculum, but we knew there were going to be some new science standards, so we kept putting it on hold, and finally... they had been released, I think, like the 2013 school year, and that the state really didn't adopt until 2014. But the summer of 2013, we had started deconstructing the math. So we kind of got on board early, started working with those standards and understanding them. What we did find out this summer, and I mentioned this a little bit at finance and that, is that last year there was no science assessment as the ISTAT test went away, and we used to test it for 2007. So we didn't test anything last year, but this year we're required to test in some way. And so ISBE has submitted something to the federal government asking to test grades 5 and 8 for this year. It will be online 90 minutes during the park window. And then, but the reauthorization is actually asking for kids to be tested at grades 3 through 8 in science. So we'll wait to see if that comes to fruition, but we know this year there will be a science assessment for our 5th and our 8th graders.
You said separate from?
From PARC, yeah, because NTSS is not part of the Common Core standards. The next generation science standards were kind of a whole separate entity. What they didn't want is if you had adopted, like in math, that you weren't then forced to have to take on science. And we actually have social studies standards that were just adopted by the state as well. So it's kind of a separate entity, but they have been aligned to the Common Core, so there's connections to both the ELA and the math standards as well.
Mm-hmm.
Elementary teachers have got some of those engineering as elementary units. They used those this past year. Mm-hmm. Hadley science teachers began implementing some of their units. We've always had a number of hands-on science materials in that, so I think they felt like they had things to work with, but moving forward and as we're getting further into the NGSS science standards, there's obviously been a desire for some kind of curriculum resource. As with math and ELA, we know that if you were to purchase something too soon, that those textbook companies would continue to react to the standards over time. So we were looking at an online resource. We found STEMscope, and I do want the teachers to talk to that. We were able to do the trial last spring. There was another online resource, and just to kind of compare the cost of what STEMscope is, through Discovery it was $25 a student as opposed to kind of the $5.25. We felt like this was a little bit more reasonable. We'll get some of the training, but I would like them to talk a little bit about that. I know some people worry when it's always online. The nice thing about it is any changes that they make, you just automatically get in the moment. There's a number of enhancements even coming this summer. So that's always an advantage. We're not looking at kind of getting a new edition. They do have, and I mentioned this, as additional resources. There are print materials available, as well as hands-on kits. At this point, we want teachers to start using that. Not that we're opposed to getting that, but are they going to use it at least to the full extent this year? So those are things we'll kind of decide. But anyway, I'd like for those from the NDSS committee to kind of stand up and come and talk. I know Dean is going to share some things. But Deb Lazarus from Churchill, Dina Savara, and Tracy Guerrieri are from Hadley, and Susan Thomas is from Franklin. And they were all able to kind of use the trial. But I know, Deb, do you want to share a couple of what your experience was? And Deb had second graders.
I worked with a team of second graders from the district, from Lincoln School and from Ben Franklin and Forest Glen. And we worked on developing a unit to address the standard interdependent relationships in the ecosystems. And we found we got to a point where we needed more. And then Mrs. Carlson introduced STEMscope to us. What I really like about STEMscope is that within the program, the activities, the lessons, the reading materials for both math and reading literature associated with the science concept and the assessments are all leveled. There are three different levels for each of those activities and all the components. And the three levels really try to meet the learning styles and the level to help each child reach its full potential. And then I know some of the other teachers wanted to talk about a component of it, which is of STEMscope, there's a component called STEM Coach. And within STEM Coach, there are articles from experts on a particular topic. There are online chats you can have with other teachers. There's articles and books and resources. And when I went on to STEM Coach, I was really lost. I was on it for 3 hours because there were so many valuable tips and strategies and suggested for teachers.
Mm-hmm. So is this a teaching? Is this a teacher tool or a student learning interaction?
There's a whole set of like teacher background knowledge. There's a whole section that's got like little T's that are strictly for the teacher to get like background knowledge and things like that. And then there's the actual lessons that are for students. And they all are set up the same way. They come with a hook to get the students hooked. Mm-hmm. And then they have their activities that go along with them that are hands-on. As well as they do have some, they call them PBLs, but they're more project-based learning activities, not really problem-based, but they have those integrated. And then, like Deb was talking about, they have under, and then, because they're all kind of set up the same way. And then they have the readings.
And the reading also comes in Spanish, too.
They have ELL vocabulary, like picture vocabulary for ELL students. So, like, this is the student wondering, and then the learning objective. And if you look at all the objectives, too, it incorporates the engineering practices. So it'll ask for the students to analyze data, interpret data. So it's using all of those. And then they have math extensions hooked with them for students A, B, and C levels, and then they have reading extensions for various Lexile levels. And, you know, the good thing, too, about this is textbooks, the current science just fades out so quickly. In here, they'll keep updating articles according to the current science. They also, they have some twig videos that Carolina Biological has come up with that are really good resources for the classroom. And Karen said they just signed on for more of those twig videos with Carolina Biological as well to help enhance.
What's a twig video?
They're just like little content videos, that's what they call them.
Yeah.
And before, there was an extra, like a huge cost to get those videos that, you know, I know the department it has is just asking me to purchase them, and you notice that this was part of it, and then we researched further, and they were going to go into deeper content with those. But see, you can see math connections, A, this is for like a basic level, B, a little bit more difficult, and then C. The other thing I really like the assessment. The CERs, they call them, the claim, evidence, and reasoning, goes along right with what we're doing with our language arts program, especially at Hadley, and getting the students to, you know, state a claim, support it with evidence, and that's all NGSS, you know, getting them to support what they've learned, you know, through research and evidence. And then, so this is the do, the expand, are the, you know, extra resources, the math and literacy, then the assessments, they come in short answer, like multiple choice, they have the CERs, and then they have some extended responses, which is really good too. The test, as Karen mentioned, is supposed to be more problem-based, like they're going to have to really show their learning, and so I don't know if they'll have extended response. I'm assuming they will, so this will give them good practice to do that as well. And then here's the picture vocabulary for our ELL students. Well, here they're going to have, for this one, they have a slideshow that goes along with it with vocabulary you can print for our ELL students as well. So, Debbie,
I was just trying to say the leveling is really helpful to teachers and students. It's a very strong component.
It looks like an identical package that kids would have to support it, but it's a different reading level. So the kids, it's not as obvious to kids that they're reading something different. It looks very similar.
They look very similar.
And then they have little question assessments that go.
So you're teaching the same concept, just different ways of communicating to the different levels.
Right. It's more comprehensible to right. And then it'll extend for kids as well. The other thing, too, is we don't pay by teacher. We're paying per student, which is nice for some of our self-contained teachers. They can have access. And teachers can also access and be able to see curriculum at other grade levels to kind of know what had been taught previously and where they need to take them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
sure. Go ahead,
Drew.
You said leveling. Could you just explain the concept to me?
Leveling.
Leveling. Mm-hmm. I think what this is, if you kind of think about a child's reading level, so with the text that they might need a lower reading level, but they're still going to be able to get the same type of content, whatever it happens to be on, but the reading level of the passage would be lower, so it'll be easier for them to access and understand that.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. Like the reading materials, is it going to be available for the students at home? They got textbooks and assertions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have their own login. And we can assign, so like we can assign, you know, different readings to different students. So then when they log in, it'll just be ready for them to read and answer questions.
Mm-hmm. My other question, I guess, was about the hands-on piece of it, because it's like really the science, I think that's the critical piece. And so do we know, you know, if we're not going to be purchasing the hands-on resource, do we have enough materials on hand for all the teachers, if they've been like sorted, to make sure the lessons that we're looking to teach in all the different grades, we have those resources? I guess, you know, it's to me that's just as important as this, so I want to make sure.
So each of the buildings over the years had a lot of science kits, mm-hmm. and Hadley kind of had a big room with a bunch of stuff in it. But so in each of the elementary schools, they actually have gone through, we started it many summers ago, mm-hmm. But they've kind of sorted and things like that, and the stuff that was kind of garbage is gone, but then it's all the resources are there, whether it's cups and cotton balls, microscopes, whatever it happens to be. And Hadley also then had a staff member who kind of cleaned up the storage room and that. Stuff that buildings thought they no longer needed, they sent back here, and Denise has organized and sorted. And so when teachers need things for that, we fill it for them. And if we don't have it, we get it for them. We can print this fall a materials list, and then we'll kind of have a better sense of what people, but people can kind of pick and choose some of the activities too, so they may not do all of them. If we were to see, you know, there's really a need, or it was way beyond the scope of what we already had, we would know that moving forward. But right now, I know at the elementary, certain grade levels are only going to be doing two units, not only one, so they wouldn't need kind of that full.
So why are we, what was the logic of switching from this to the engineering as elementary that we did this past year?
We're still going to use engineering as elementary. I mean, I think the elementary teachers, they love it. They feel that there's a place for it. And I think the more we can kind of hit those engineering standards. So we don't intend to kind of take that away, but we're not adding to that.
So was that a one-time cost for the kids, or
yeah,
was that like a yearly cost?
It was a one-time cost.
Also, the units, the engineering is elementary, are really linked to these activities because they're all part of the same standard.
Mm-hmm.
So is that something that's isolated?
Mm-hmm.
So you guys had a chance to beta this for a little bit. You guys are going to be the champions of this software. What are your peers are going to say to this? Too much, too soon? Already got too much on my plate?
No, more like thank you.
Mm-hmm.
with a lot of it, a lot of what we were kind of scrounging around for what can we put together to do some of the units and stuff while the standards are coming out and things like that. And this really tightens that to where you know exactly what the standards are, you have exactly what you need to do in order to get to those standards. So it really, I think, narrows everything down for us, really.
And actually at Hadley, I think everybody moved
to
the idea of change, but they all were able to participate in the trial.
We kind of all made a decision after working with the collaborative that we all agreed that a really good reason.
I'm sorry, during the introduction, was there a church show where
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we had on our team, we had the K-5, we had representatives at every grade level in each school. So we had somebody doing something everywhere.
Every grade level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The thing too, if you ever looked at the standards, these NGSS in detail, sometimes they're pretty difficult to understand. I mean, me being a biology major and, you know, a science person, and Tracy as well, we would read the standard and be like, okay, what is it really that they're asking? And one of the good things, too, that this has helped us with is really kind of narrow in on what is it that they're really wanting mm-hmm. from the standard that we can make sure that the students.
I have one question. When you guys were testing this beta testing at Patrick Center, was there another online program you guys also tested to compare it to, or last year you determined that this is the one we need to pilot test? And that's, I think I might ask the question last year when we were talking about this.
Well, I think gone are the days of the pilots where people would give you a lot of their resources to kind of experiment and kind of try out and kind of spend that time in that. Other than we have access to pieces of Discovery Education, and they use that over the course of the year, and that's when I referenced that the $25 per student.
Okay.
And we just felt like, you know, I think a lot more will continue to come out with it. This is 1 year only. It's renewable every year. I guess if we found that A, teachers really aren't using it, or if they don't like it, I would be surprised by that.
Mm-hmm.
What's your feedback tool for this at in the schools, or in terms of usability? You know, do we like it? Do we not? I mean, the total cost of this for the year, just to, you know, to record it, is just a little over $25,000, and that's covering every student in every grade level, K through 8, right? K through 8. Yeah. So it seems to me.
Excuse me. That includes the training. So
includes the training and includes your ongoing coaching tool, and I'm glad that you mentioned the videos, because I also think that those are those upgrades that you tend to, you know, have to pay for, but it's nice that they have plugged in. So what's the feedback tool in terms of how are we using it? Where are people stuck? If they're not, what's easy about it? That collaboration piece, too.
We'll use that this year. After the trial, we brought the group back together and kind of just started with that plus delta that we were going to talk about. And that group made the decision, yes, we wanted to go forward with it. Obviously, given the timing, that's why we're here before you now, so that we could get it for the fall. What we'll do this year, the training will be in October on the Institute Day.
Mm-hmm.
As teachers are using it, we've got our science reps who will be out there kind of gathering that feedback. And we'll kind of just periodically, probably more problem solving, what issues are they having, and we can use them to kind of help us problem solve whatever those issues might be for the teachers. Usually it's learning to navigate mm-hmm. the site a little bit more like this, that you could have spent hours on there. Hopefully the training will help them narrow that.
Yeah.
And I think we'll get better at how they want to set up their lessons and kind of take them through that. But we'll gather feedback this year just to make sure that people are using it, what do they like, dislike, and go from there.
Yeah.
And I said I'd spend hours, which I did. I meant it was so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
One thing led to another, and I just kept clicking. I found it really quite easy.
Yeah, that's not one
of my best skills.
There was just an article in the Daily Herald today, actually, that talks about the new science exam in 2016. And the other link, and I know you work with the Associated Districts, you know, for the Glenbards, but it's 5th, 8th for us, but then it's 10th grade at the high school level, right? So it's, as you work with Sean Byrne and, you know, the department chair at Glenbard West, at least, are they able to access what we're doing so that they can see that linkage all the way up, too? Are they aware?
I'm always curious about that. Teach by course. Our middle school might be more integrated.
Yeah.
So our goal is to kind of get them where they need to be and ready for school.
Yeah. I know once the science edition is done, one of the things that he had said in an article, or at least on the website for 87, is that having the classrooms all together is going to better integrate the course model. And so it sounds like our kids will be, you know, positioned to move into that.
We are in constant communication with him several times a year.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, you had said that the teachers could pick and choose units, but I guess I'm just wondering if we're following NGSS standards, like how stringent are those units that are going to be?
The units are identified what they'll be teaching, but there's different, some of the activities within the unit that, this one has three types of activities, so they can choose to do all three, or they can choose to do one or two. It might depend on their students, and we kind of have a guide for them by trimester, but at their PLC is when they'll kind of discuss which of the units are going to activities they're going to have the units doing, which activities they might do, which investigations. And some, I know when we kind of process the feedback, some of them said, well, we have this other activity that we really love. Can we still use it? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've got in their toolbox already a number of things that they enjoy using and feel that they get good results with their students with that, and we would encourage them to continue to use
those. So STEMscope seems highly recommended. It seems like an awesome tool with a lot of things that have added features that are great. From a cost perspective now, we're looking at $25,000 and change for this year. $6,600 is training. Do you anticipate that training will continue to be needed as we move forward? And then that's about an eight. If they don't adjust their cost, that would be roughly $2,500 annually going forward as we continue to use this. Now, another program software may come out that you guys adjust later on, but for now, looking into the future, that's kind of the cost stream that you see. Okay. Thank you.
I belong to this middle school science group, which our middle school teachers from all around the United States and just highly recommend this program that they're using both at the middle school level and at the elementary level. So it's around.
And the continuity, I know we've talked about that as a board as well in the past, the continuity from K through 8 and the familiarity that students then have with the use of tools and content and that type of thing. It sounds like there's a nice bridge, too. Yeah, interesting.
We have time to get all the training in for the teachers to feel like they can fully utilize this for this, for this whole school year.
The training will be October 13th. So I know we'll have teachers who, once they get their passwords, they'll be in there, but we won't expect them to have to start using it until the 13th. If for some reason the teachers who still didn't feel like it was enough, we'll talk about what we can do to support them.
It's pretty user-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had what, an outer overview and then just kind of did it.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the better ones. The way it's set out, it's very easy to find what you're looking for. Kind of thing. Like she said, the interest is the biggest problem because you want to read everything that's on the site and not just what you have in your own curriculum. Mm-hmm. But it's very easy to navigate and get just exactly what you want, just exactly your unit and thing, and or your standards, whichever, however you're looking into it.
And this is a good example, too, of the deeper level it goes into. If we look at this learning objective, the student is expected to analyze and interpret data to provide evidence for the effects of resource availability on organisms and population of organisms in an ecosystem. So you're not just studying, you know, organisms in the ecosystem, but you have to go deeper into solving this problem. So we really like that.
The setup videos for this and for engineering is elementary are of great value. Before I taught anything last year, I watched the setup video several times. Mm-hmm. They're excellent. They have the question and answer, and they tell you what to do first and how to set it up. They give you options. This gives teachers many choices.
Kurt, you have a question?
Yeah, I just had a question. I've been around education 25 years, not an educator, but one of the things that when I ran for the board, that was important to me was, you know, as we spend money on programs, I always like to see ahead of time, and I'm in sales, so I like to, if I spend money on something, I need to know in advance what I think those benchmarks are going to be as I'm spending money on it. So my question is, what measurements do you guys have in place to measure the effectiveness, beyond just asking teachers whether they think it's working or not?
Well, we currently don't have a state assessment to kind of compare anything to see growth over time. Teachers will, as grade level teams, they can build their common assessments through that. They can do a pre and a post, and we'll have to use assessment data from the grade levels. But at first year, it's hard to say. I mean, this year we'll see how our fifth and eighth graders do, and then moving forward, you'll be able to compare and see that growth.
So it really goes back to the educators, you know, as you talked about using the assessments and then how you at grade level, at levels, decide what you want to use, how you want to use it, and create that continuity.
And the assessments that are on here, the types of questions that they have on here, are really going to set the kids up to be in a good place to take that test. Because it's not us writing the questions and you know, our talented being able to or not being able to really write a good question. They're written for us, so, and they're at a level that the kids really have to stop and think. It's not just regurgitating data and information. They actually have to apply it and use it and analyze it and back up their statements and things like that. So it's taking that literacy component further, too, because they have to speak about it, write about it throughout the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And the math is incorporated in there, too.
Yeah.
So we're hitting from all perspectives.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you ended up here. I mean, when I go back and, you know, this is in the board report, but that you started to pull apart the new standards, really deconstruct those in June of 2013. So it's been really 2 years to start at ground zero, it sounds like. And this goes back to the whole curriculum cycle, too, right? We've got to look at it, pull it apart, and then it's identifying with pilot testing like you've done, you know, what's going to fill those needs or those gaps. So I just think that's important. You've been doing it, but to know that if this has been, you know, a 2-year process is important.
Well, I think it's important to find the appropriate materials too, like Karen was referencing. A lot of the companies just take the book that they already have and just put meets NGSS standards on it, just put a sticker on it and say, okay, now we've got it. And it's like you get into the book and you go, no, you haven't, you know, kind of thing. And this
you can actually tie it, the statement is right there, you see the standard. It's very tightly put together, which is what one of the things I liked.
Yeah. It was an opportunity. We did deconstruct the standards, and as they started to kind of investigate them on the site, we'd be able to look back and see the work they had did previously. Did we miss anything? Were we on the mark? And so they've kind of been able to adjust it. I mean, we're to be implementing in the 16-17 school year. Mm-hmm. And I feel like in all fairness to our teachers and our students, we need to provide something that helps get them ready for full implementation.
And they said this test for this year, even though we're not fully implemented in NGSS, there will be NGSS tests as part of it.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Good questions. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. Yeah, we appreciate
it. Thank you all.
Thank you, Karen. Excellent.
Next up is the Churchill Classroom Edition to replace the remaining portables revised award that was addressed in Finance Committee. Jack?
Yes, thanks. Jack Hayes again with President Quinn. So we did talk about this in Finance. I think you were all there. So we're going through and recommending that in the apparent low bidder, who identified an error in the bid, released from the bid and awarded the low bid for excavating the bid spend in the amount of $306,545. This is presented in Finance here for discussion, and it's also an action item later in the board meeting so that we can move forward with excavation if we're ready to do that at Churchill.
Mm-hmm. I have a question I thought of since we talked about it. So it sounds like the original bidder, they wanted about 12% more than their original bid. You said 40,000.
Yeah.
Right. So, and they were unwilling to move forward at a loss. I guess I don't know if that would put them out of business, but I don't know. Is this a company that we've used a lot, or do we have any lessons learned and how they were vetted or anything like that? Since this
from an American standpoint?
Or from...
Because American was the low bidder. That's what you're talking about.
Oh, they were?
The company.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make sure I'm answering the question that you're asking. American was the low bidder.
Oh, okay.
People asking to have their contract.
Okay, American, sorry.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I actually think what ended up happening in this situation, the lesson that we learned is that, you know, the contract is pretty clear. Our contracts that we set up are pretty clear. The scopes are, we narratively describe the actual scope of work. And when we meet with them, we go through it item by item by item. We open the drawings in front of them, and they bring it all up. They show us their takeoffs and so forth. And, you know, I'm not sure what we could have done differently in this case because I think they thought they had a gotcha. They thought there was a mistake in the documents. And so they came back looking for more money, expecting to get it. And when we reviewed it and showed them we didn't have it, and not only did we believe the documents were correct, the second bidder included that scope of work in their documents, they just made a mistake. You know, they made an error, and I think made a strategic error thinking that we were going to roll over. So I'm not sure what we could have done differently.
And it sounds, Jack, like the difference is $17,000 between the two bids, but it sounds like when they came back, they couldn't even meet that difference.
No.
So they were even more than that. What
they really were, because because one of the questions Fred asked them is, you know, if we're going to pursue your bid, will you do the job? And they said no.
They pulled themselves out.
Yeah, they would have rather, you know, because so they felt like they were too far under to really take it.
Yeah, because for me, I think I was with Stephanie. It's like, and I mean, at $17,000, I. You know, it's interesting. I can't imagine that they're going to walk away from that. But that's something you could probably cover in their work. But it sounds like maybe they were even thinking they were further than that. So that
earthwork is one of those funny contracts because you can have the exact same scope of work, right, Joe?
Yeah.
And earthwork contractor A can do it for $250,000, and earthwork contractor B, C, and D can only do it for $500,000. For some reason, earthwork contractor A has another job, a site, or a location where they can get rid of dirt, or they can bring dirt from that in that particular slice of time gives them the opportunity to do it cheaper than everybody else. And that's one of the contracts that's hardest to really estimate because you don't know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Jack.
Thanks, Jack.
Okay. Thank you. On to our action items. Item A, our consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
Under section 1, so A1, and there's A, personnel report, employment recommendations. My question here, I just had a question on this.
Let me pull that, and then we'll do, if there are any other items to be pulled, we'll put them together, and then we'll go back to it at the end of consent.
Okay, so let's do this then. I have employment recommendations. Then I also had the union-exempt compensation, the food services, section 5.
Okay.
So
those two?
Yeah, and then I had questions on... and they were just questions, just so I understood.
Okay.
On item 2F, disposal of surplus property.
So we'll pull those two. Do you want to add?
And then in G, under the FOIA report.
Okay. So those four items. So just to clarify, human resources under personnel report, a question around employment recommendations. Item 1, item 5, union exempt compensation for food servers. Under item 2, finance, facilities, and operations. Item F, disposal of surplus property. And then item G, 24-2015 FOIA report.
Yep.
Is that
F and G?
No, you know why? Wasn't there a problem? Didn't we find a problem with that stuff?
F and G?
When we were looking at that.
I have the most recent...
I think the numbers
on the exec summary
that
we got, I think, somehow got mixed up from the...
Yeah.
Okay. But you want FOIA?
You want... So basically, you want the surplus property and then FOIA.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So it's at the G.
Okay.
Yeah.
The numbers don't point up there.
No, not...
But we're going to pull disposal of surplus and FOIA. Union exempt. And employment recommendations.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, hold on.
All right. Then let me read.
Hold on.
I just want to give Nelson the turns that I have them all written.
Okay. Sorry.
Thank you. So that.
We got it.
Great. Thank you. All right. So we'll have the consent agenda now include the following items. Item 1, human resources, the personnel report, resignations, resignation and retirement, leave of absence. Item 2, finance, facilities, and operations, treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue/expenditure summary report, the summary of bills and payroll, school district payment order, vandalism damage report, serious safety hazards, school district payment order for June 17, 2015 through August 4, 2015. Item 3, other matters. Item A, board meeting minutes from June 8th, the regular meeting amended, and then June 22nd, regular meeting. And I had contacted Nancy on Friday with a couple of corrections in the minutes that are on here. They were it was basically a typo, right? So those have been corrected, and you have those in front of you. So June 22nd, 2015, regular meeting, and then June 22nd, 2015, regular meeting closed session. All right, may I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Roll call, please, on those items from the consent agenda.
Mr. Boczynski?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Okay, so we've had a couple instances where board minutes have been pulled, and so we want to make sure what we do is we review while we're here the items that were pulled from the consent agenda to consider them in meeting now. So, Kurt, if we can go ahead and just start with the employment recommendations. We all have our updated blue sheets here.
Ms. Nelson?
Yes.
We need a motion.
I'm sorry. You're right. Sorry. May I have a motion to approve the four consent agenda items as will be presented? Thank you. Second. So Stephanie and then Kurt for the second. All right. Discussion.
So my questions were on this. The first first question I had was on the employment recommendation. I was confused, just again trying to understand. Are we approving something that was already done in July? So, and have they been paid?
No. So been paid. The individuals that we've been hiring?
Well, I think some of it was in regards to the summer. Was it? I don't know what you call it. Was it a summer camp for Plus?
Those payments, those recommendations are on the first section under employment recommendations.
Mm-hmm. And I apologize. It says
summer enrichment program. There are four individuals, I believe, on there.
Right.
So that already, I guess my question, so that already occurred.
Correct.
Have we paid? I mean, are we approving something that we've already paid someone on, or have they not been paid, or it just seems
have they?
It just seems
I see what you're saying.
To us mm-hmm. in June
yeah,
I don't know.
But. No, I recognize what you're saying. So yes, these individuals that look at Bob, have they gone through payroll for their FLESC camp?
There have been some FLESC camp payments made. I don't know specifically about these individuals.
Mm-hmm. So I would say, Kurt, to your yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I mean, we all need money, but.
I appreciate your point, though. Mm-hmm. No, it's a good point.
There were four teachers that had FLESC camp.
Correct.
There's four teachers on there.
Correct.
And again, our last meeting was June 22nd. We didn't meet in July. So thus, these personnel issues would move forward to our first meeting for August because we didn't.
But I recognize what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So and then as far as the positions for FLESC, are we adding staff positions in that?
For this year, we're not for FLESC positions. Are we adding this year?
We added the roll call.
Yeah. So how many did we add this year?
Two. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. So I guess with that issue, this is just for me how I think, but that if we're adding positions, probably this is, again, just a personal choice. I'd like to probably see those pulled as separate items versus being in the consent agenda, just so the public can see, you know, we're adding positions, we're going to approve those. Again, that's just maybe the rest of the board doesn't think that way, but that's just kind of how I come from as far as that goes. So,
well, these are, just to clarify that, too, I mean, the positions that are approved have already been put into the budget for hiring. They're already part of the budget. Yeah.
They're in the budget.
Okay.
Yes.
And on this board report, there is one class teacher.
Well, you haven't approved the budget.
Right. Okay.
So. But there's...
We can say they're in the budget, but we haven't approved
I'm just saying that the budget that we've been looking at for the last 3 or 4 months, they're already... those positions are in there.
And just clarification on that, she didn't call it the approved budget. She called it... it is up for approval.
Right.
Kurt, anything else with the employment?
Yeah. And then just salary increase on the unions. I don't have any issue with the increase. Again, my issue is probably budgetary. Maybe, to me, some would argue maybe benign. I'm not sure it's benign. I'd probably just like to see those kinds of things as we're approving salary like that, that we pull those out.
Are these the food servers?
Food servers. Again, we're not talking about a lot of money. I don't have an issue with the money. Just like to see, and to me, it just makes it a little bit more transparent in that way with some of those items. You know,
can I ask a question? So, are the two food servers, Joyce Jackson and Irene Thomas, you want those pulled from the consent agenda? So, anytime we have a food server that comes in, and
well, no, I think anytime you're going at that kind of a thing, I don't see an issue with making that a line item separate from the consent agenda. It's not.
Okay, so just under the union exempt ones, and then under the anybody that's FLESC or a food server should just be a separate line under student or superintendent's recommendations. That's what you're asking.
Yeah, I mean, I just think rather than put them in the consent agenda, we put them outside of that.
Why is there?
I just think you're approving a salary that brings that one.
Right, but part of the intention of the consent agenda, and then also for board members to get this in advance, is to partly what you're asking, Kurt, is to make sure that we're clarified around the dollar amount, you know, hiring, those kind of questions ahead of time. And I understand that, So I think this is a good conversation for the board to have around what's the role of consent agenda. We can do that. And part of it is recognizing that these are decisions that administrators make based on, you know, hiring needs too. You know.
Yeah. And again, I said this is my own personal. I mean, you guys all tell me that I'm wrong.
That's making sure. Yeah. My question is just to make sure we're covering the right areas that we want to cover, so we're not missing anything.
Yeah. The issue with PLES wasn't that it was on the consent agenda; it's that it's already occurred, and we're just.
No, that was his first issue. Second issue. And can restate it if I got it wrong. But he talked about the PLES teacher. He wanted in the future all those off the consent agenda. Or did you say that?
Well, it doesn't have to be plus. Anything that's kind of that falls under that category. I mean, to me, we're adding some staff, we're putting in the consent agenda, and now we're saying, oh, it's part of the budget. We won't do anything to approve the budget.
So
we call it semantics for me, but it's a little out of order.
I'm just trying to do it so it's efficient so we're not in the future having to discuss it. So you're talking about any new position. So if somebody's hired for a position that's already existed, that's okay to be on here.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a new position for the upcoming school year, you want that out.
Mm-hmm.
And then any increase in salary, so the $12.63 an hour, that 2.8% increase, you want that
out. That's a good way to
But if they stayed the same, if they didn't get the dime raise...
Here's moving side to side. So
that's okay. Yep. Okay, so... I mean, I would just say a 2.8% increase on $12 an hour.
You can say that under this, but we don't know what happens in the future.
Okay.
And we bury something in the consent agenda that's a much larger picture.
Can we maybe put some material so we're not, you know, like a material thing? I mean, that's usually when you do it, like over $10,000 it's material or over $1,000 in a year is material.
Well, I think this goes back, I do think it goes back to the fact that, you know, part of this is that our board does not meet in July. That's been our history, and so some of this is a timing issue as well, right? Where we need to do board business here. So, I see Laurie taking copious notes, so I'm sure we can have her follow up with
that. I think the last two points were because of the summer. I think the first point was
I understand.
The last points were regarding of not bearing interest, which I understand what you're saying. I just, my preference to the board, you know, my preference is have a material nature to it.
Right.
If the magnitude of somebody's increase in the annual is $50, they're going to make more. For us to pull that from the consent agenda seems that we're getting down way into the weeds. If it has a material nature.
Which is why you use a consent agenda.
Right. So you can set some bar of material low if you like, so that people feel comfortable with it. But I would take that approach. That's just me.
Kurt, what about the other two?
Disposal surplus property. I didn't know how the process for that. How do we work? Is it a closed bid? I didn't know.
If it is a sale of district property, we are required to post it in a newspaper of general circulation, and then we receive closed bids, and they were opened when they were supposed to be opened, and the prices have been accepted.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall offhand what the prices were, Carolyn and Dave in my office.
That's
took
okay.
care of that.
Yeah.
We are required to post public notice to take public property out.
And that's a common practice to do it that way, so we're doing it that way. So I'm okay with that. And then the FOIA report, again, maybe not a big deal to me in terms of most of them, but it caught my eye when the Chicago Tribune was asking for information, about the D41 relationship to Solution Tree or PLC at work or affiliated companies. Can anybody shed any light on why they'd be looking into that? Or
District 87? I don't know. I saw that too on their agenda, on their meeting agenda from last month. But no,
I'm not sure why they.
Don't know. All right.
So.
All right.
All those items, we can move back forward into action items now.
Correct.
Okay.
All right. Roll call, please.
Mr. Bochin.
Yes.
Mr. Buckle.
No.
Mrs. Blair.
Yes.
Mr. Ellett?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, thank you. All right, superintendent's recommendations.
So the adoption of the 2015-2016 budget will be the first.
Okay. A public hearing on the 2015-2016 budget was held earlier this evening. The board has discussed the budget at a Finance Committee of the whole special board meeting on May 26, 2015, and the board approved placing the budget on public display at its June 22nd meeting. There was one comment during our public hearing earlier tonight at 7:15. There have been no other comments to date. May I have a motion to approve the adoption of the 2015-2016 budget?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
I had a couple items on it. I'm going to vote no on the budget, and I'm going to explain a little bit why I feel this way. I think at some point, we as a district need to have some real conversation about reducing the budget. And, you know, I don't know if that's 3% or 5% or 10%, but I just know that the people that I talk to in town are telling me to tax out. So we have to come up with some ways to figure that out. So I was not, as most of this rolled along throughout the year, I was not on the board to do that. I'm going to give you a timeline of something as to how we do things as a district, and again, this was prior to me, but in February 2014, there were two PBL positions added by cutting the elementary and middle school budgets. I can go into why those weren't actually publicly said, but I won't. I'll keep those comments for later. Then in May of 2014, a new position of PBL coach was created to help build internal capacity and relationships with outside experts. These three positions, two at elementary and one at Hadley, are cost neutral due to compensatory cuts and repurposing one position. And that's directly from our word and our verbiage. Now we get to this budget within this past year, and we've added a fourth PBL coach at the elementary level. So what began as two has blossomed to four. And that's the way I think we do things, and I think that's what upsets people. And to Mr. Cooper's point, The AP positions, we went from half-time to full-time. Again, our wording from our minutes were paid for by repurposing one administration position and by reducing the fund for staffing contingency. I'm not sure what that means. So, again, it was done prior to me, but I'm not sure what that means. But that's our verbiage. We haven't really reevaluated this decision. I've not heard conversation about it. In terms of the assistant principals. And then, again, this last piece for this, which may not be part of the budget portion of it, but I heard the other day, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the assistant principals are working on a teacher calendar, is that correct, plus 10 days? So for me, I think they should be working as long as the principals are, should be on that same track for their calendar. So, again, we've not revisited it. Maybe it's something in the future that we should look at. But I think, the TRS payments are a start in terms of talking, showing the public that we're serious about, continuing not to tax them for that. So those are my positions if I'm going to go on the budget.
Thanks, Kurt. Other comments?
I have some comments. Based on my first question here, I just realized it doesn't really matter because it passed, but I made a mistake. Because I did have a concern about one of the employment recommendations with the pulls that had less positions. So I should have said no on that, but my brain wasn't thinking so clear. But it doesn't matter at this point. But I guess I'd like to understand more about these less positions that we're pulling forward 2 years. We added two positions, correct? And I'm not 100% sure what the cost of that is. But...
because they scaffold up because FLESS is moving.
So.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's a cost associated with it. And our original plan when we rolled out Spanish 2 years ago was to roll up year-to-year, correct? And now we're going to be adding FLESS to fourth and fifth grade ahead of our original plan, pulling that ahead of our roll-up plan.
We're giving them some supplemental
right.
Spanish instruction, but not the daily FLESS that we were
doing. So it's not the same thing.
Supplemental was the 30-minute block that was open in the schedule.
Correct.
Per week. Mm-hmm.
Per
right, 30 minutes. So
45 minutes. Sorry.
45 minutes.
And it's going to be 45 minutes once a week. And correct me if I'm wrong, but full immersion. Where the teachers are going to speak nothing but Spanish into the cultures of Mexico, Spain, and Peru. Right? Make sure I have that correct. And those are for students who they haven't had Spanish before in our school district. Do we have a solid plan in place for rolling this? Are we going to roll it into Hadley, pull it ahead 2 years after these fourth, or I guess this coming year's fifth graders, are they going to go to Hadley? And are we going to start, are we going to put FLESS into Hadley?
Those are those conversations that we continue to have with Karen.
What's occurring starting in Spanish at 7th grade to 6th grade?
The 6th grade.
So they have that opportunity to start 6th grade. So mm-hmm.
But, and do we have a plan in place now with Hadley for pulling that ahead next year into Hadley?
We've already started those conversations kind of fully developed because we need to have them full Spanish.
Okay. But it's not been fully vetted and decided yet at this point because we're pulling it ahead 2 years at Hadley.
What's been decided is that 6th graders will have the option to take Spanish in 16, 17 school year.
So I guess it's going to cost us more money, and we're pulling it ahead 2 years. And really, I guess for what I'm trying to grasp, for what reason are, you know, the plan to implement Spanish was kind of well thought out. It rolls up year to year. So I'm trying to understand why we're putting some sort of a FLESS program once a week into fourth and fifth grade, and it's going to cost us more money. Why are we deciding to do that now? Is it just to fill the time? We thought it would be a good use of the time.
What makes you think it's costing more money?
Well, we have to hire two more teachers years in advance.
I don't think that's the case. I think we're hiring two teachers because you're rolling up. You have the first graders, second graders doing it now,
and the roll up is
adding
the
third graders.
But we're adding the teachers to support fourth and fifth grade now.
Are you adding teachers to support the roll up in the third? Or are you adding those teachers have more time of the day that will support fourth and fifth? Your statement is that there's two teachers needed for the fourth and fifth grade, 45-minute blocks per week.
I guess that's my question.
That's
my
question.
That was my question. At the beginning, I asked if. Since we're pulling it ahead, we're adding teachers. And when I mean pulling ahead, I meant adding it to fourth and fifth. Because I know third isn't pulling ahead.
I did not understand that. So it's a fair question because I think it's the roll-up that's causing them to have more. And we actually found out that when Katie was here when we were all in front, that it wasn't the initial projected of 10.
Projection is that we would use 10.
And now
we need 10 plus teachers. We'll only need 8, but we've accelerated additional two. So we would have hired two more this year just to get to third grade, and now we've added two more, so an increase of 4 total since the spring to give us
8.
So we're adding two more this year than we need. That was my
question. No.
Well, we need them.
We will need them, but not this year. I mean, it's money we're spending, extra money this year that we wouldn't technically need for another year or two.
And why is that?
Karen, talk. That was going to be my question. So, Karen, you talked about this at one point, and it was wanting to get our kids prepared in order to do the 6th to 7th. This has been, you know, part of the conversation, and in some ways, this is also preparation for language beyond Hadley. So, what's the, you know, as the language teachers talked about this, as the FLESS educators talked about this, seeing this last year, what was the?
Well, and I think there's a couple of reasons, but one of them would also be so that as we implement the PLC schedule for teachers, is that we have a place for our kids to be every day.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't we maybe, I guess, you know, if I look at it from a cost perspective and value-added time perspective, couldn't we use resources that already exist in the building and offer something like handwriting or keyboarding and those skills that I hear from teachers that we just don't, you know, we don't have time to offer in the curriculum, but maybe it would be valuable for those fourth and fifth graders to have. I guess, I mean, I'm not an educational expert, but I'm just concerned about trying to fill this block of time for fourth and fifth graders, I think, you know, rolling the Spanish up year to year, the students getting it every day for 30 minutes, they're having a much different experience than these fourth and fifth graders are going to have when they get once a week full immersion into Spanish, and it's going to be world cultures. When they've never, if they've never had Spanish before, I don't know how valuable that is going to be, and I don't think that's preparing those students to roll in to have these foreign language the same as this first, second, and third graders are getting it. Would we be better, instead of pulling two teachers ahead, was no consideration brought to filling that time differently?
I think we looked at different ways to fill the time, but we would still need a staff to be able to teach, whether it's handwriting or keyboard and things like that. Mm-hmm. We don't have that extra staff in the building to do.
Like our LSC.
We're using that as well for the time.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'm going to, you know, we want to take roll call on the budget, and I think this is an important conversation. But there's something that I think has been unstated, and that is there's a philosophical difference between what people, you know, see as value and in terms of foreign language or not.
But this wasn't part of the plan here. I mean, I'm not questioning the Spanish program at all. I've never questioned rolling up first, second, third. I'm not questioning that at all. Mm-hmm. I'm questioning we're just putting this into fourth. I'm not questioning next year when it would supposedly roll up to fourth and the next year fifth. I'm questioning that there was a thought out plan for Spanish. It was to roll up year to year, and that was very purposeful. And now all of a sudden, because we have to fill a 45 minute block once a week, we're putting our FLES program in fourth and fifth, which was not part of the original plan. Mm-hmm. Do not mistake my questioning as questioning the foreign language program at all. That is not what I'm doing. I'm questioning the money that we are going to be spending to fill this 45-minute block for fourth and fifth graders. I understand if we don't have the resources, maybe we could hire resources to do it, and it would be much cheaper than a FLES teacher, you know, to teach handwriting or keyboarding. And like I said, I'm not an expert, but I have a big question. I don't have a fourth or fifth grader next year, but I can't imagine, I guess in my mind, are we truly using that time wisely for these students? And this has nothing to do with the Spanish program. If this was not part of the original plan, it's basically just filling a 45-minute class.
Well, it's 45 minutes of time to study world culture with kids that have never had Spanish.
Well, that's
going to be.
Not necessarily true. They've never been taught Spanish within our system.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's semantics. For most kids, you know, going through our system, they've not been taught this. To Stephanie's point, we're rolling it up. If you have a fourth or fifth grader, I mean, I want you to really, you know, think about you've got a fourth or fifth grader who's never, let's say he's never had Spanish. He's now going to sit in a classroom with someone speaking Spanish to him about world cultures for 45 minutes. And the bottom line, this is the fill time. There's no other explanation for it. We're just going to throw it out there. It's the fill time. And it is to my opinion, it is a waste of time.
Okay. Stephanie, you know, you said on the FLES program, just for clarification, this is what you object to, but you don't object?
My line of questioning had nothing to do with that.
I understand that, but I'm asking
I was merely questioning the money we're spending on.
No, I know that. My question is not that. My question is more specific to the FLES program where we're off to rolling it up. You are for that, or are you just not discussing that at this point?
I'm not discussing that.
Okay, because I thought your opinion before was you weren't for it, so I just wanted to make sure.
Well, that's irrelevant to the budget.
It's irrelevant maybe to this, but it helps me out.
Well, so,
Drew,
I just had one other point about the budget. I guess my other concern, I'm also going to vote for it no as well, because I feel like we have too many mid-level administrators that there isn't the same accountability that we're seeing with our teachers, and I'm not 100% sure what those positions are doing. I know back in 2001 there was a referendum that specialists were to be in the classroom. I'm not 100% sure if they are in the classroom anymore, and so I want to make sure, you know, that those funds that were approved by the community, are we spending them the way that the community voted on, back in May when we first received our budgets, I asked to have salaries broken down by position because I wanted to see how that looked across the district. And I still don't have that. And I guess in my mind, I know our at the elementary school level, at the middle school level, I know we've made a lot of, they made some cuts to reduce their budgets as much as they could. I've seen some, you know, positives on that side, but I just feel like from an administrative standpoint, I'm still questioning how we're spending some of our money, and based on the fact that and that we're running a deficit, I'm just not comfortable approving the budget as it is this year.
We did ask you that 7 weeks ago.
And, you know, from here on out, I think those things need to come to the board because we're being directed by individual board members
right.
at this point, and that...
Well, we're asking for information.
Let me finish.
You're not being directed.
Excuse me, Kurt.
Yeah.
Let you
direct me in a meeting with the two of you.
No.
From here on out, what I'm going to request is that the board direct, because what you're asking administration to do is time. It takes time to do all this work. We have a few things going on. So from here on out...
Nothing much more than the budget should be important. And we're asking for access to information, which we as elected officials have the right to ask for. We do not need board approval.
Yes, you do. You need to direct the...
The board directs the superintendent.
You do not...
ask you for information.
Kurt, excuse me. Let me say something
just
here.
Wrong.
What Dr. Gordon, our superintendent, is asking, and this is exactly what I was going to say, is this is the first I've heard from either of you that you had any concerns around, FLESS I recognize because I know there's concerns around that in some ways in general. But it's also, like, as a fellow board member, the first time I heard concerns around administration, this issue of specialists. If we're talking about specialists being put in place in 2001, this is 14 years later, and certainly education has evolved, and those positions evolve in terms of the needs in the buildings, and the principals determine that.
You can have your opinion on this.
So, Kurt, let me finish, please.
No, I don't need to be...
Kurt, let me... Please let me finish.
What's
important... Kurt, you're out of order. May I please finish?
Not out of order.
May I please finish?
Anything to you, Eric, and said how you should behave as a board member.
I'm not talking about that. I'm saying the value in having this information as a fellow board member, all of us, is really important. I would like to have known, as I know, and I'm assuming Finance Committee, et cetera, who worked diligently on this budget. We had special meetings with the administrators. They came to us and had a special committee of the whole so we could ask questions. And so it, for any of us as individual board members to request something as superintendent, and we've talked about this before, it is at a minimum important for the rest of the board to understand what questions other board members have. Because when we come to the table, then we all have the same information. And tonight, we don't have the same information, so I'm surprised by that. I'm going to end the conversation there because we'll talk about this, certainly as a part of our workshop on the 20th, just in terms of our ability to...
I would just like to clarify something. When the budget came out and we were asked as board members to provide any questions that we had on the budget, mm-hmm. in my email to Paul, I said back then in an email... that I would like to see more detail in the not specific names, but we had a total on our budget for salaries, and then we had mm-hmm. positions and the number of positions. And I asked them, I said, I would like to see how that salary is broken down by positions. I asked for it in an email when I was asked mm-hmm. what questions I had about the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So this was not a directive in a meeting, and I don't know, I didn't share that with the board. I didn't realize I was supposed to share all my questions with the board, but I do know that was never discussed at the meeting, so I did follow up with Bob and Paul about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have made, I mean, I know I've talked at meetings about how, you know, we keep finding money in our budget to add specialists or add coaches, and it's concerning to me that we keep finding funds to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on these positions that I feel like, you know, I haven't really heard justification for why we're adding them, why they're necessary all the time. The number, you know, originally it's three positions, then it becomes four. And so I know I have made those known. And I, my biggest thing was I wanted to make clear there was no directive given. I was asked for my questions about the budget. I provided them. It wasn't addressed in the meeting, so I followed up afterwards. There's no surprise.
So I will. It is a directive when we have to ask staff members to do additional work. And that it's very clear. When board members are asking staff members to compile work or compile information that is not readily available or not in the format that you want it, we broke down all of the data, every salary. We've given that to the board.
Yeah, we had that done.
You've had that at your disposal. You have every one of those pieces.
So to Erica's point, as we're being told that we are discourteous to the staff over this, you have never, although you did ask us for questions, we provided those questions, and you just chose not to answer it. And that's what your answer is.
No.
You chose not to answer.
Kurt, that's incorrect. And no one has said you've been discourteous.
Please show me an email that says from the superintendent that he's been ordered directive that he's not going to respond to. That's not happened until tonight.
I will tell you, Kurt, that it's a matter of board protocol for board members to work.
Board protocol.
No, it's not. It's a member of school board of education protocol. So if there are issues like this, then certainly they're valid, and you'll vote as you'll vote tonight, and you have the right to do that.
Yep.
I had one observation I wanted to make about the budget. Drew, you had one. Go ahead. You go first.
I wanted to talk about time. I wanted to understand the time, because this is we've been talking about the budget. I mean, because I'm all for cutting the budget where appropriate, and I think there are areas that we should be cutting. And it's, I don't know if it is 2 or 3 or 10, whatever that number is. I'm very interested to seeing how that can be accomplished. My issue really is the time, and it's really two things: the time and how long, how what is our process? How long we've been working on the project, on the budget project, and it seems to me, and Bob, help me if I'm wrong. I mean, we're kind of the 11th hour in terms of, right? I mean, normally.
You're taking action time, so
we're
yes,
taking
you
action
are.
Time. Yeah, but it's based on the timeline that's in board policy of when we start looking at the budget, which is way back in January. We're not compressing this process, because the process started.
Oh no, I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I guess I'm trying to understand the timeline, and in order to affect changes to the budget. Mm-hmm. You kind of start in January, and then we get all the way to August, and we're expected to vote. Is some of that driven by school code?
Our board policy has a timeline which we follow.
So it's not really it's
well, school code says we have to
have it adopted by
right.
September 30th,
right. Exactly. Okay. Right. I think, go ahead, Patrick.
Sorry, Julie. I think that's one of the things that you on finance and Joe, and when we started this, is we wanted to take away a little bit from that short-term thinking of what's next year. And I think this is the first year, and we got it off. We did a little bit last year, but this is the first year where we said, Bob, let's start projecting 5 years out.
Mm-hmm.
So we can start looking at that long-term planning, so we can start seeing, okay, as state revenues go, we go from 97% to 94%, and, tax levies go from $4 million to $3 million or something like that. So on the finance committee, we're looking at that, not only this year's budget, but that second and third year's budget, to understand that what are the consequences of reduced aid, reduced government grants, and reduction of tax levies. So we can have that
3-5-7 year conversation, and I think this is our first time on paper we've illustrated that. So to your point, I'm feeling more comfortable as the time goes forward, and hopefully future boards as well, as you start looking at that 3 and 5 year benefit of, if I want to be here by 3 years, I need to take this step this year and next year, and 5 years this year, versus a lot of those short-sighted steps that maybe we, you know, for the right reasons previous boards may have done, but I think we have the opportunity. We're starting to turn that corner to look at long-term directives of the district versus short-term, I call them income statement conversations that happen at the administration level. So.
And I think to your point, Patrick, I mean, part of, we've talked about this before, but budgets are driven by your programs, and the programs that are set are also then identified under the superintendent and his team, cabinet certainly, what the needs are in terms of fulfilling those program objectives. And you know, one of the things I wanted to mention, and this was some data that was part of our some of the analytics, and I think that this is important because when we looked at one of the things that was looked at, and I think our budget does a nice job of this, of our operating expenses, which is instructional spending, and then that total operating spending, our district has the 8th lowest operational spending budget per student out of the 19 of the benchmarks. And so, you know, when you look at that and knowing the kind of work that starting finance last year, but this year too, has done, I think it's important to be able to see that's a value statement in terms of how we're, you know, educating our kids at what cost. The other thing I want to say about the budget, and this goes back to a comment I made earlier, is I thought it was really helpful this year to have that committee of the whole and be able to have each of the key administrators, assistant superintendents, and other staff provide the insight that helped us then send those questions forward. I'm looking forward to a budget, you know, to Patrick's point. And thank you, Bob, for building in all those contingencies, because I spoke with a couple of assistant superintendents for finance at other districts at a LEND meeting, and 2 out of 3 I talked to had not done that. So I think, again, it just positions us to have a better view of the future. All right.
My other point is reducing the budget by an incremental amount is really a matter of board priorities. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to steal your thunder about board priorities, but, you know, the board priorities would set a direction that we would do that would be built into the budget. And I'm in favor of doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, if the rest of the board would, you know, shares that same vision in terms of priorities, I'm not comfortable doing it right now. But I think it all ties, it circles back to board priorities, what's important, and that'll drive the budget decision.
Sure.
Through the budget process.
And the vision for the district, right, exactly. Yeah. Right, thank you. Roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buchholz?
No.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
No.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Bob. Item 2, approval of grievance resolution. In 2014, AFSCME Council 31 filed a grievance related to the termination of a special education instructional assistant, Carol Warren. Around the same time, Ms. Warren filed charges with the EEOC and the IDHR, which is the Illinois Department of Health? Human Resources, IDHR, thank you. To date, neither the grievances nor the charges have been litigated, and no findings have been made. To avoid the expense, diversion of administrative time, and further delay of possible litigation, the superintendent is recommending board approval of agreements to resolve the grievance with the union and all matters related to Ms. Warren. The agreements contain the following key points. Item 1, withdrawal of the grievance by the union with prejudice. Item 2, voluntary withdrawal of Ms. Warren's EEOC and IDHR claims with prejudice. Item 3, Ms. Warren's waiver of the right to bring any other claims against the district. Item 4, a $20,000 payment to Ms. Warren. And item 5, acknowledgement that the agreements do not constitute any admission of fault on the part of the district. May I have a motion to approve the grievance resolution agreement with the union?
Motion.
Second, so Drew and Stephanie. Any other discussion? We just for information, we talked about this certainly in closed session as a personnel issue and wanted to bring it back to the public to in public meeting to take our action on it. So we have discussed this. Okay, roll call, please.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Thank you. Item 3, approval of settlement agreement and general release. May I have a motion to approve the settlement agreement and general release as presented?
Motion.
Second. Any other discussion? Okay, roll call, please.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Item 4, supplemental pay recommendations. May I have a motion to approve the supplemental pay committee recommendations as presented?
That's what we talked about. Just
since
June.
Yeah. June 22nd. Second. Thank you. Any discussion? All right. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. And item 5, Churchill Classroom Addition to replace remaining portables, revised award recommendation. As noted during the discussion portion of the meeting, American Grading Incorporated was a low bidder awarded the contract for earthwork by the board in June. However, American Grading has now informed the district they are unable to continue with the bid as the company underbid the project. The bid was awarded to the next lowest qualifying bid, Bisbing Construction Company. I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to accept the revised recommendation provided by FQC from Bisbing Construction Company Incorporated in the amount of $306,545 for the earthwork associated with the Churchill Construction Project revised bid award.
Motion. Second.
Any other discussion? Just want to thank Jack for being here and giving us that insight. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mr. Buckle?
No.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
No.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. All right, thank you. Superintendent's report.
Start of the school year is just around the corner, August 24th. We open the doors. But I really want to thank Dave Scarmato, his team, for their incredible work this summer for getting our schools ready to open. Each and every one of them have been in all the schools. They're looking fantastic. Churchill, we're burning some midnight oil to get everything done, but I know it will be accomplished. The district office and schools are busy getting ready for the school year. With the start of the school week, 2 weeks away, our office staffs have done a beautiful job of working with our parents, our CSO staff, again, just really having daily conversations with different parents around multiple items. Just really appreciate everybody's customer service, their reach out to our parents, and ensuring that our parents are getting what they need to start the school year. The survey in the community and the staff, as the year begins, will be reaching out to parents and to the community in a variety of ways. We'll be surveying parents and staff and our 4th through 8th grade students in the coming months. So we're looking forward to that and that feedback. Our Facilities Community Task Force, the first meeting will be next Tuesday, the 18th. We've got 26 members joining us. And thanks to Erica and all of her work there. The charge is reviewing the historical facilities documentation and the current facility needs, evaluating the current recommendation for viability and financial implications, and then reporting to the board. opportunities and challenges of the facilities plan. So excited about that team coming together and as we kick it off next week.
I'm sorry. Could I have ask you a quick question?
Ask away.
In terms of the information that's being presented, the different options, I mean, those are the same things that the board has looked at in,
correct,
in the past. So.
Let me just clarify. For some of the solutions, because one of the things that the task force will do is look at some historical pieces as well. So okay. I just want to make sure.
Sure, but I mean, they're trying to get like a whole spectrum and put all the kind of chart all the different options. Okay. And if a board member had an option, mechanically, would that be something that would be provided to you, and it would go to the?
I haven't thought about new options that would go to it. I would assume that would be at that committee meeting. I don't know.
I would recommend, because you don't want to prejudice the process of community engagement, that you go to a meeting as a community member and not a board member.
Okay.
We're a
half
the team
community.
Well, you can talk as a community
member. As long as
you're just tough.
Yeah. It's, you know, this
right.
Yeah. It's
more than two board members.
Well, yeah, you'd sooner talk with two board members.
Right.
But
I'm thinking
we're all there.
At this point, we have asked for a task force to go out there without the influence of the board.
Right.
So.
Well, I actually, it's funny that this was brought up, because while we're talking about the community task force, I would like to make a motion that we add a facilities option for the community task force to consider, which would be to lease property from the Glen Ellyn Park District to house our early childhood preschool programs to free up space at the elementary schools. That's my motion. I don't know if I'm going to give my background for it right now. Basically, before we were seated, Kurt and I talked to a park board member, and so we know it's an option.
A current park board member.
I was not on the board when the.
It was a current park board member.
And I was, you know, I wasn't on the board when the options were discussed that have been put on the table for the task force, and I don't believe, as far as I'm aware, that this is an option that was discussed and thrown out. I feel like this is a new one.
I feel like I'm all up for options. And, if you want to detail something in a report and send it to me, I'm happy to review it.
Why would we do that? Isn't that the task force's responsibility?
Well, we've already
I'm personally happy to review it. What I don't want to do is have a discussion.
I'm not discussing the feasibility of the option here. All I'm saying
is we have the motion on the table.
A couple of options to consider.
And I'll second it.
And I'm asking that we put this option on the table for them also to consider. I realize they may come up with their own options as well, but I'm not going to go to the facilities task force and talk. As a board member, I don't feel we should do that. But this is an option that I feel is viable and I feel should be considered. And so I would like it to be put on the table for the task force to consider. I am not saying as a group we should sit here and vet if it can or can't be done.
I think it's
a possibility.
We have a motion on the table. The motion is for the facilities task force to consider renting space from the park district in order to
house
our early childhood program. You're requesting a motion that the facility task force take that as an option and start to discuss that. Okay. Is there a second?
Yes.
Okay. Discussion.
Did they tell you how much they'd use it for you?
We asked in terms of big picture items. I mean, that's, you know, but the reality is this board came up with three options. So you've already narrowed the scope. It's not like this board said, hey, here's a facilities task force. You guys go ahead and run with this and come back with options to us. You've narrowed the scope to three options. So we're already telling them, you have these three options to talk about.
Four options, though? You're speaking like three options.
Well, four is do nothing.
Okay.
Well, I guess so, four.
Well, then that loses me because I know that's an option. Okay. So I lose it when you're not talking.
So let's say there's four options, one is do nothing. So you've already narrowed that scope. So all we're doing is saying, okay, this is a viable option. It creates four or five classrooms. It's been done in the past. It was done years ago. And, you know, and
which,
I know the argument.
Which facility are you guys talking about?
We didn't drill down. We said, we said, would you consider this? She or he said, this could be, we have excess capacity. We just did the study for that.
Where's it at, though? So is it spring?
Joe, we're not getting in. I mean, you're the one that's saying you really want to talk.
No,
we're
I didn't not, say that. That's a Senate but, case, but you're not going to, so I'm going to ask the question.
Well, the motion here is to request that the task force put this on their list of things to consider. And I, just an observation, but, you know, to your point, Stephanie, part of what, you know, we said was, and Joe repeated this, is that the board didn't, you know, it was important for the board not to to walk away. Patrick just said this, to say this is the community's. It's on my own personal level. This is theirs. The scope has been a scope has been given to them, but it doesn't preclude a task force from discussing anything. So I think us making a motion to give them a topic is antithetical to the whole process.
Well,
I don't think we need to.
Topic.
We don't need.
Then why are we giving them anything?
Yeah, why
we're saying that there's the facilities committee started with a scope, but our charge to them is to say, look at this and discuss this as a committee,
so
and come back. So they could
a K through five school or additional.
They could and within that. They could identify several other things. I mean, it's going to be a smart group of people. Let's let them discuss it.
Well,
I think it's driving. You know, the board is driving.
The board prior to us, and we have a right to weigh in on this. The board prior
Kurt,
to us.
I'm not saying
narrowed,
we don't. I'm providing my opinion on this.
Absolutely, and I'm going to tell you why I disagree. You narrowed the scope to four options. We're asking that a fifth option then become available to them. And the board prior to us, their vision was possibly those four options. So we are just asking that a fifth option be made available for them to consider. That's what we're asking for.
Mm-hmm.
You guys asked for that last winter. You had a right to do that. You did it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a right to ask for it now, to ask for a fifth option.
Drew?
With all due respect, I do want to honor all the work that's gone into this, which goes back to the Blue Ribbon Committee, was that 01?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this has been an ongoing dialogue, you know, for 14 years. And I want to honor all the work that all the different groups have done and to move the process along.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand Patrick's point that we really don't want to, you know, kind of let the process run its course and not interfere. But from my standpoint, I don't see the harm. I don't see, mm-hmm. Here's another idea. Here you go. Put it in your list, and they may throw it out right away. They may jump up and down and say, "This is great." I guess I don't see the harm.
Then when do you stop? I mean, because you could tomorrow, you could come up with four more ideas, and there's no harm in that. You could come up with 10 more the day after that. There's no harm in that.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of them going through the historic thing, and that's the first stage, which is what you referenced in the start of the Blue Ribbon Committee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I agree. No disrespect to any of the work people did with many boards before me, and maybe you were on most of those boards. But I mean, the folk, and I agree with Erica. This isn't leaning them, but at some point you got to let it go. When your kid's driving a car, you got to let them drive the car by themselves. You know, when they go off to college, Kurt knows this. You got to let them go off to college. You know, I certainly don't. But Erica, you know it. But you know, when do you stop, Drew, if that's your logic? Because I can come up with 10 more. I mean, most of them, you could say we vetted, but the specifics aren't there in this one and wouldn't be in the others. At least there's specifics and plans and all that. I think you have to let them go. That's what we ask. That's what we want. So I'm of the opinion we're there. Let's stop the fiddling and let it go. And when it comes back to us, there's nothing that says that Stephanie's idea and Kurt's idea and this mystery trustee or whatever board member at the Park District, the commissioners, thank you for clarification, don't have the best idea in the world. I mean, it may be a great idea, and then to Kurt's and Stephanie's chagrin, none of the other commissioners want it done, and then we're nowhere anyways. So let this go. Let the ship leave the port. Let it come back. There's nothing that says we have to approve anything that comes back or any of the four options that are in front of us. There's no ending to this where it's a must. This is all getting community involvement at the highest level with top quality people who are committed to doing it.
Then just say, you know what, everything's off the table. We're not going to give you any scope.
That's what it says.
No, you've given them a scope. It's been clearly defined. You just said there's four options. It's a scope.
I don't think it limits them to four, though.
Right. Let's,
if that's a clarification you want to be made, let's make sure Erica and Paul, who are charging this forward, make it. Because I think that's the intent. So if that's a clarification, I'm fine with that. That's my comments on this.
All right. Let's take a thumbs up, thumbs down. How many people would like to move?
No, it's a motion. Why don't we just take a vote?
For clarification, we can't vote on something that's not listed on the agenda.
Right. So is there
at this point, it's just a consensus,
right?
Okay.
It's noted that that's how you get it. You can't actually vote.
You can't, yeah.
Right. So those who have consensus to move this forward?
You can roll call vote anytime.
You can
roll call vote, but it wouldn't be considered an action item,
right. It's not on the agenda, right? So, those who would like to move this motion forward to the task force?
Things
could
get really out of whack.
You have consensus on this? Is there consensus to move this forward?
We've done, and we've had other examples of this. Is there consensus to move this forward? If there's consensus to move, if you want to see this move forward as a motion, move this forward, sum up. Okay.
So I would like a record who thumbs up it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she will. Nancy,
oh, you know, my thumb was not up.
My thumb was up.
It's just the verbal because we're streaming here.
Okay. So Mrs. Clark, Mr. Buchholz, Mr. Ellis, right? And interested in not moving this forward?
No.
Would be Mr. Escalante, Mrs. Nelson.
I made my
Mr. Bochensky. All right. It's on the record, however. Task force will have heard this. Erica's here. Paul's here as the facilitators. And I'm assuming the task force, bright group of people, are going to open up the discussion. So thank you. All right. Paul, you were interrupted.
Yeah,
so
it's a tie. Then you win.
There's no win.
There's no consensus.
There's no consensus.
What is consensus by definition? Is it a win?
There's not consensus that it shouldn't happen.
Right.
It's
on the well, and it's been vetted in public. So your desire to have this conversation has occurred.
Thanks, Erica. I appreciate that.
Well, I mean,
sarcastic.
Okay, thank you. Stop the side comments, please.
I do, you know, I guess I'd just like to point out, too, I mean, I'm not trying to make things more complicated for the facilities.
No, I understand that.
You know, I feel like we have a potential issue with, are we going to be able to get this town behind building a new school? Are we going to have enough capacity to fill a fourth elementary school? And I think we have not given them, you know, besides the additions to the school, we haven't really explored many other options. I've not heard the board discuss other options. And this is one that I feel strongly about, and I feel that, you know, it's viable and the task force should consider. I mean, in reality, if you look at the options we've given them, a K through 5 center creates an odd number of sections at three of our elementary schools, which does not support teacher specialization. So is teacher specialization no longer going to be a priority?
Well, I think, I mean, what we're saying is, Patrick.
Can I apologize? I mean,
yeah.
We had the discussion.
Right.
We're
going to move forward. Yeah, thank you. All right. Any more on the update task force, our first meeting?
No.
Okay.
Good.
All right. Title I.
We will ask for clarification.
And I made a note to follow up. Yep.
Paul, Title I?
Yeah, we're excited about a new opportunity over at Churchill. As a Title I school, Churchill has the ability to use some additional federal funds because of the percentage of students who receive free and reduced lunches. Churchill is this title school, again, which allows us to allocate federal funds for them. One of the programs that we're looking at adding is an extended intervention program for kindergartners. This would be for 34 students who have been identified through different assessments, which would start probably toward the end of the first trimester to allow teachers to assess students, to put eyes on students, and to ensure we have the right students coming forward to be a part of this program. And it really is about intervention program for reading and math for those 34 students. But as we all know, there are space limitations at Churchill. One of the pieces that we do would be to move the two classes of preschool, the one classroom, over to Forest Glen, which actually helps us in a lot of ways over at Forest Glen. It gives Forest Glen all pre-K under one roof, allows teachers to have those conversations, those PLC conversations. Transportation is now minimized a little bit as opposed to two buses going from Forest Glen and Churchill. Both of the buses will just be at Forest Glen. So we're excited about the opportunity, excited about using the federal funds in that manner, and it's one of those models that the title puts out there, saying this is something that is a good use of title funds. Again, there are no local funds being used for this. Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, how long do you think the Title I grant? I mean, it will be reoccurring year over year?
It has. It has.
Okay, so is that did that go away when the Churchill was no longer?
If we ever reduce the number of students who had a free and reduced lunch.
Okay, that's what drives it.
The
fact that it was.
No, it's all driven off of free and reduced lunch for title programming. That's how the federal government recognizes Churchill, and those funds can only be used at Churchill. They cannot be used anywhere else.
Okay. So you came up with this when you found out that these funds were available, and you just had to shift some things around.
So one of the pieces within the waiver, one of the main pieces was no longer having to have parents have that choice out of the school because it's not meeting AYP. There is no longer AYP because of those aspects. One of the other pieces was the SES. I was in the acronym just
Supplemental
Educational Services,
which
allowed for tutoring, outside tutoring agencies to come in, apply for being a partner with the district and tutoring students. That freed up roughly $80,000 because the federal government pulled that piece away. So now we're able to use those funds for a program like this to help our students.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like you figured that out quickly. So.
Mm-hmm. I had a couple of questions about it. I mean, I think it's a great idea and hopefully will help out some more students at Churchill. One thing I was wondering, essentially, it seems like it's almost a mini kind of pilot program for full day kindergarten for some of these students, because they'll be there instead of half day, they'll be there all day now. I mean, have we worked out the logistics? Are they going to stay there for lunch? Or
yes,
they'll
eat lunch there.
The one, I do have one concern about it. I know I asked you about it and I got the answer, but one of my concerns is of the students that are identified, if any of those students are coming from our dual language program. In the dual language program, they're going to get their math instruction in Spanish, but these interventions that we're going to be offering for the other half of the day are going to be in English. And I guess just concerned if that's going to be confusing for these kindergartners and if that's been taken into consideration.
One of those pieces that we want to hire is a teacher with an ELL background, an ESL teacher who has that background. who's able to support students all the way through with their math and literacy.
But it won't be confusing to a student for in the morning get math and English, and the afternoon get it in Spanish, or vice versa, however it would work.
As I speak with Karen and Katie, no, we feel like this is a great opportunity, especially if we can get a teacher with an ESL background to support our students.
Mm-hmm. I know that one of the, this brings up a question that was brought up in a program review, and I think it was 2 or 3 years ago that Katie McCluskey did. We had someone from that external free program review, and they talked about, this always stuck with me, but I think it speaks to your question, Stephanie, and it was that when children are learning content in their, it's their first language that kind of codifies the knowledge, and then it's easier for them, they have a quicker turn in terms of being able to learn it in that other language. So It's a plus. When I was reading this, I thought back to that, and that it's a plus to have their first language and have an ESL, ELL teacher to help support that, because that's where the learning occurs in terms of the content. So it seemed to me that that was a, you know, aligning back to what the program review was.
Definitely.
And then just my last thing. I guess thinking if we're finding as a district that we do have a need for an intervention like this, and there could be a need at the other schools, should we look at providing at the other schools funded by the district if we
cannot
have space for it?
As I mentioned to the board in my weekly update, so once those federal funds
funded by like using our budget, not
as long as you use
can't come from,
but you once you offer that program anywhere else in the district. You must also pay for it out of those same general local funds at Churchill. So that's that title fund, and that's that supplanting. If you offer it anywhere within your district with local funds, you cannot use title funds to supplant that program at the title school. So what is good for all federal funds cannot be used for. If it's something different and unique, that's where those funds have to be used for. And it's the title rules and the supplanting are very challenging to overcome. I mean, there are a lot of nuances within the federal dollars. Mm-hmm. Does that
make sense?
Okay.
All right.
That's it for me.
Great. Okay, board reports. I had, we had talked about this before we left in June about, and it actually came as a result of some conversation around trying to be more consistent as a board with our reporting structure. So Nancy was good enough to send a PDF of the board report. I think people have gotten a copy of this. And it's a draft. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward, but wanted to get some feedback because as we start into the year now with our rotations, and that starts, well, it says August, but really September, each of us will start doing our rotations through now through June. And it was a way to speak to some of the lack of continuity sometimes in terms of board reports and making sure that we're all hitting some of the same areas. So I just wanted to get any feedback on that. Certainly you can send me an email. If you want to, Dean asked me for a Word document so he could give some feedback that way. So I'm happy to send it to Nancy, and she can send that back out as a Word document. Any observations?
So I was not really with the document, but is the purpose to have that, we fill it out, we send it to the board, and then at this bullet point or this agenda item, we would just simply ask if there are any questions or clarification and not really go through those board reports?
You could go through high points. I think it's good to have it on record, you know, who attended what were some of the key takeaways, which we were doing. Right.
Okay.
It helps Nancy in terms of, you know, the summary notes around the minutes.
Okay.
And then it just gives us all the same, again, eye on it. So, again, any comments, changes?
I think this is good. I mean, this is the standardized is the board report. I like it as a Word doc as well.
Okay.
I think it's a great start.
Okay. I'll send a Word document, and then if folks can send, again, any adjustments you want to make to this, you know, at the end of August, our next board meeting, then we'll start in full force with our rotation. So just a reminder to do that. And FYI, Nancy is, we had talked about this, sometimes
PTAs meet every other month. There's not consistency across, so we'll make sure that we reach out and make sure all the board members know when the first meetings are. So we'll do that. All right. So we'll send that out and get any other feedback.
And one thing I kind of wondered about that is that I know the PTAs all attend PTA council, mm-hmm. you know, and give their updates of what's happening in their PTAs, and then the PTA council president comes here to kind of report out of what's happening at PTA council. And mm-hmm. I wonder if sometimes our reports could get redundant if we're reporting the same business that
sure. In that PTA case, yeah, I agree with you. So, you know, in that case, I think for us, those of us that go to PTA council when we rotate through that, Kurt starts that in September. It's to maybe identify issues that are more board directed. And that is probably more helpful so that we hear those things. But you're right, more of the activity-based stuff we hear from the PTA council president, which I think is so important. So, yeah, good point. So maybe just pulling out those things that are really board-related. Good.
One more
Thank
point
you.
To mm-hmm. that. Nancy, the activity report that you send to the board, is that back getting back online? Because I didn't get it when the... with the
board events?
Yes.
Yeah. That's an electronic version now for your calendar?
Yeah, on Google.
Calendar.
We can show that to you again.
Something else that was in
more Google
paper.
Yes.
I'd be happy to go over.
Yeah, Nancy said she'd be happy to. Yeah,
okay, thank you.
Yeah. And this is not, can come back again on the 24th, but Drew and I met. Here's some extra copies. With regard to a discussion around board goals, and so what we put together for you was just kind of a high level discussion that we had, and I think actually Drew just referenced this a little while ago in terms of, you know, vision, etc. So we our discussion really focused on the role of board goals and the principles that guide, you know, board development. A couple of those, as we talked about, it was really that Board of Ed goals focus on current needs but also long-term outlook for the district to understand the current state and then also clarify, you know, how the district moves forward. And then we just, you know, we talked about in general, so what, you know, what the role of a board is, you know, oversight, governance, you know, those things that set that high-level direction setting. And so it's around academic, social, emotional direction. And then there were some principles that we discussed, too, and those are in here. You know, students, every student is capable of learning and progressing. Education is a shared responsibility. Issues around a safe school environment, et cetera. I'll ask Nancy to attach this to the minutes so that people can see this. And then we talked about a couple of goals that were pretty straightforward and ones we've talked about before, which was resources and support time for professional development and how, you know, the board supports that, you know, ultimately through PDT, the professional development team. But then also looking at our much more robust community engagement plan, the surveys that are being done, et cetera, and then how we monitor that, you know, as part of our goals. So these were ones that Drew and I kind of high-level talked about because they've been on the table. But we thought the next step would be to give you this, certainly reach out to, you know, Drew and me, Drew or me, rather, and we'll bring this back on the 24th as an agenda item to spend about 15 minutes and kind of get our focus around this as well. All right. So thank you, Drew, for meeting with me and getting some focus around this.
So on the board reports, we did have a finance committee today.
Yes, go right
Everybody
ahead.
Everybody was here, so.
Yeah.
I just didn't know Dean wasn't coming to hear me. I didn't like the finance committee.
Not you.
I mean, just real quickly, we discussed the items, the three items that were discussed on our board meeting, which was the construction update, the budget versus actual Churchill Earthwork contract that was voted on tonight, and then STEM school, which I can't go into that discussion in detail from the teachers who used it last year at our meeting, which is really a cursory we did talk about TRS. It was a TRS 101, which is more just educating us and anybody in the public who's listening with TRS and this is. That will be a continued discussion. We we asked, I asked to send Lori comparables. Lori's going to get out to us. We asked for the 35 and then the numbers 32. Those are always compared to. And then if people would like, they don't have to, they would like to give the comparables back to their suggestions for Lori to do, and then kind of look at which ones we agreed on and she could use moving forward. So that, that was what we discussed.
Thank you. All right, any other board reports? We're not, we're back into this. Upcoming meetings. August 20th, 2015, the Board of Education will hold a special workshop meeting at 6:30 here at the Central Services Office. That's a meeting that we had mentioned again at the end of June. It's with our Illinois Association of School Board Field Service Director, Barb Toney, and it's a chance for the board to come together in our closed session around professional development for the board with our IASB rep. August 24th, 2015, Board of Education regular meeting at 7:30 back here at Central Services. And then September 14th, 2015, the Board of Education regular meeting, 7:30 again here at Central Services. That night there'll be a reception, informal reception for new staff members that will precede the board meeting from about 7 to 7:30. And I think at last count we had, what, 22 new staff members to the district? So we'll be welcoming them in. Also, just a reminder, on the morning of August 20th is our welcome back to the district over at Hadley. And so if board members are available and can come over, that's from 8 to 10, I think. So 8 to 10. And then that's meet and greet for the school. So welcome board members to come. It's always a nice kickoff for the district. I have one quick update. This coming Wednesday morning, a president meeting has been on the calendar at 7:30. Paul has a meeting that's at 8:15. So we're checking to see if we're going to move that to 10:30 so that it doesn't bump up against your other meeting, which is fine for me. I can switch something around. So if there's a board member that wants to attend, you can let me know later. And that'll be at 10:30 instead of 7:30 on Wednesday. Right. Okay. Under other, the academic update follow-up from our June 22nd meeting.
Kurt and Stephanie asked for this to be back on just for further questions, conversations. Karen's going to show some additional data, and she'll go through that piece right now.
And this was the requested data for first, sixth, and seventh and eighth grade. We had presented this look back in June for grades 2 through 5. So just to kind of a couple of reminders, the fall, the spring, obviously you want the spring growth to be higher. This is how much they grew. This is what they were projected. So you want this column to be higher. That percent of projection is the actual mean growth divided by the projected mean growth. And you want that to be above 100%. 100% was considered average. And then we talked last in June, too, that percent mean projection you want to be at least 50%. So this is the first grade data. And again, the last 2 years of the district data for math. Here you've got the pre-Common Core, and then these would have been the first 2 years after the shift to Common Core. So you can just kind of look, for first grade here, the numbers in reading, this is first grade. The fall score up here went slightly down. At spring, again, came up, just slightly down there. But each group of years, their actual mean growth was over the projected growth. And same thing with the percent mean projection has gone up here. It did dip there in reading at first grade. So then we've got the sixth grade data. And again, I won't read it to you. Just kind of, you can kind of quickly look for those trends from here to here. And then where it's going, stay the same, slight decrease, but coming back up again. Again, their actual growth is always higher than projected. The percent of projection has dipped there. It's coming back up, but the percentages, it's not slightly, there's not as discrepant here on the percent on that projection. for sixth grade and then with seventh grade. Then we're still on reading. Same thing, this has gone up, slight dip here at fall, which again, this is not cohort. This is just all the groups of the same grade level. It goes up there. Again, they've always exceeded their projected growth target. Here, you did have a good number of percent of students who met the projection. And that increased each year as well, the percent meeting the projection. And then in eighth grade for reading. Again, increases, if this was an increase each time, did the same but an increase there. Here they just met their growth target, exceeded it here. Dipped here and increased there. And then the percent meeting projection had dipped and then it came back up those last 2 years. Now we just switched to math. First grade, so the same thing is going to apply. We saw an increase here. There was a dip here from the fall. But it's spring here, it steadily increased. Again, they always exceeded the projected. And again, you can notice the difference with 7th and 8th grade are projected to grow as opposed to what our 1st graders, they're projected to grow considerably. And here we had a dip, but it came back up. And again, slight dip, and then again back up over where we were kind of pre-Common Core. And then our 6th grade math data, increased there, but we saw a slight dip at fall. But here you've got an increase straight down. Always met their growth target. Dip here, but a nice increase back up here, and then it was above that dip, but then it came back up and surpassed that original one. And our seventh graders, kind of follow the increase there, a dip here. Increased a dip there, still met the projected growth target. The percent meeting the projection had gone up, and then the percent of projection as well as the percentage who met the projection. And then our eighth grade in the math data. So increase there, just slight decrease, increase of their spring score across the board, met their growth. Or exceeded what their projected mean growth was there, and percent of projection. This was a great, you can see here, slight dip, but number of students who had met it, and then the percent meeting the projection dip, but then it had an increase there. So, again, this is just to kind of share that data. I believe, Nancy, we're going to add it to the agenda so that
it'll be posted tomorrow.
And I had asked to see that because we were only shown grades 2 through 5. And I think, when we were shown grades 2 through 5, kind of the summary was, if you look at the last 2 years together, 13-14 and 14-15, our numbers were going up in those 2 years compared to the subsequent 8 years. And it was said, it's been going up in those years, which is the think tank years, which applies to 2nd through 5th. But in looking at this and looking at the other grades as well, we saw the same trend. So I don't think we can make that assumption that, specialization, was it multi-age that caused to see that increase? And we're seeing the same trend in 6th, 7th, and 8th. I don't think we can safely say that. And I think that was kind of the impression I walked away with. From the last update, since we only saw 2nd through 5th, was that we were saying that was the cause for the increase, but I don't, in seeing that we've seen it in all grades, I don't think that's a fair assessment, which is why I wanted to see it for all the grades. And I know, Kurt and I had asked for the academic update to be on the agenda for a couple of reasons. To begin with, at the last meeting, we didn't feel there was enough time for discussion by the BOE. We had the long presentation, and we asked 10 questions throughout, but we felt there was still more discussion that could be had. And to be honest, after seeing the academic update in June, we just feel that some of the board and the administration, we're just looking to continue to move in the direction we're heading, and we're going to present data to support our position versus truly evaluating all the data. I didn't hear a lot in the last presentation about evaluation, the scores, what we're going to do about that. And I know I'm not comfortable just letting us move forward down this path for 5 to 7 years, as was said at the last meeting. That's a child's entire elementary school career. And the fact of the matter is, many of the new initiatives that we've launched in the schools were directives and are now partially owned by the board, including myself, even though I wasn't involved in the decision. So Kurt and I want to make sure that we're truly evaluating the data. We're trying to determine what's causing our success or our failure, so we can ensure that we're serving our students' needs properly and spending tax dollars wisely. I don't want the students heading off to middle school or high school with huge gaps in their education because we were too proud to admit that maybe we made a bad decision. And I realize that this MAP data is merely one data point, but I've also heard concerns from parents and teachers. We can't quantify these thoughts because we haven't done a survey for a year and a half, but there are many questions and concerns that were raised by teachers in the survey done a year and a half ago, and nothing has really been done to quantify or evaluate those. I don't believe Team 21 really did a whole lot with that, so at this point, all we can do is evaluate the MAP. And walking away from the June meeting, I kept hearing we're growing, but to me that's misleading. If you look overall by a cohort, which would be the same group of students, their scores, they go up from year to year. I mean, that's kind of a given. You can attribute that growth to age or maturity, not just teaching methods. And we really should be looking at the percentage of students that are meeting their growth targets that were set by NWEA. And in 2013-14, we saw an increase, actually, kind of across the district in students meeting their growth targets. But we did see a drop pretty much across the board in 14-15. And I'm concerned that we've had no explanation or evaluation of this data. Instead, we're lumping it together into a two-year chunk versus really trying to figure out, well, what did we do in 13-14 to see a spike, and what did we do in 14-15 to see a drop? And we did show a drop in both by grade level data and by cohort data. I put some slides together, I know, at the last meeting, and I wanted to throw them up again this meeting. I sent them to Mike. I don't know if we could put them up there. I feel like last time I was rushing. I know we had been sitting here for a while. I didn't want to push the issue, but I wanted to just point out a couple of things from them.
We have copies of them.
And I don't know if we can throw those up there so that the audience can see them, so they're not wondering what the heck I'm talking about. Mike, did you get those? And basically, the slides that I put together, I took the academic update, and I just really combined 8 pages of data, and I put it into one slide. You know, it for me, looking at, you know, data like Karen just presented, when you have data like that for every year, it's for every year, for every grade, I'm kind of flipping through 8 pages trying to see, well, what was the trend? What trend did we see in 2014 for all grades? So I know I when I was sitting up in the audience, I asked to see the data compiled like this. So now that I'm sitting up here, I took it upon myself to throw it together.
So, Stephanie, can I ask a question? Because you know, knowing that this was going to be under other, I went back and I looked at all of the academic data, and then on your chart up there, you have 2013-14 think tank, which is a big pile of, you know, there's a lot in there.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And then 2014-15, you have pulled out only problem-based learning.
I would just put the year that I, like, major initiatives were implemented. That's what I did.
Right.
That, like, you know, that was in
'cause I want to be clear on those, because you brought this up the last time, and I thought it was a good point, and you just said it again. And that is that in each of these cases, and I know that Karen spoke to this too, there's any number of reasons, you know, as simple as a child comes in sick, they take their MAP assessment, and they're not at their best. So, you know, I just want to, again, just because we're streaming and people aren't seeing this, that's a big chunk of potential criteria and activities.
I understand.
You know,
I mean, I know in like 13-14 there was a lot. I mean, there was I couldn't fit it all on here. It was more just kind of a marker for me, but in 13-14 we extended the amount of math time, we added science back to their curriculum, we added specialization, we added multi-age, we added Spanish to first grade. I mean, there was a lot that was done. I didn't capture all that on here. So I know in 13-14 we had more teacher planning time. There's a lot of variables that could have impacted any of these. I was just trying to kind of put main markers. But I think, you know, from what I've heard is, you know, we're growing, we're a strong district, but we want to keep growing. So if that's our goal, should we not see a trajectory where our growth is actually increasing and we're seeing an increase in the number of students meeting their growth targets? And the first chart here, this is reading percent meeting projection over time by grade level. So this is for, you know, for grade level one, for example, the blue line, every year of first graders, what was their percent of students meeting their growth target? Now, granted, from year to year, the first graders, that could change. So their metrics could change on what they should be meeting for the growth target. But this is just saying what percent of them met their growth target.
Are you on math or reading?
A reading.
Okay.
Reading is up there, the first one. And in looking at this, all grades showed growth in 13-14, with the exception of first. Could that be attributed to first grade losing 30 minutes of core instruction time for Spanish? I don't know. That's just a question in my mind.
Didn't they lose it out of math?
Hmm?
Didn't they lose it out of math?
No, in the first year they lost it out of literacy, and last year they lost it out of math. Second year they lost it out of math. And then in 14-15, every grade except for third and fourth showed a drop in the percentage of students meeting their growth target. So, you know, that's how I'm, maybe this is a simplistic way to look at it, but, you know, I feel like, so just you, say.
You're saying fifth that you need it? Fifth increase? Isn't that
third? Third and fifth showed an increase.
I thought you said third and fourth.
No, third and fifth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, we set aside about 30 minutes for the conversation, and I know that the board was also given the answers to the questions from our internal expert in terms of our psychometrics. And so this helped me a lot in terms of the questions that you asked. I guess, you know, my question for you, Stephanie, is what's the importance of this? What are you trying to help us see and or ask questions about that our NWEA assessments aren't providing? They're normed nationally. You know, when I look at these big chunks of think tank PBLs, I want to know what that's, how I'm supposed to read that.
Well, you could scratch that off the bottom if you want. I'm more just concerned that in these years, what percentage of kids are meeting their growth target? But let me quickly go through these in my notes, and I have my questions. The next slide is math. Percentage meeting projection over time by grade level.
Mm-hmm.
If you look in 13-14, we saw a spike, and then in 14-15, every single grade in our district, the percentage of students meeting their growth target dropped.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that was, but in my mind, that is concerning to me that we saw a growth in one year and a drop in the next year, and I would think we'd want to look at why was that?
Didn't we ask the question too?
There was no
too?
Discussion of this.
So well, there, no, but I actually there was a question. Well, not on yours, but in the in the data that the administration is charged with providing for us through NWEA, I remember that we asked the question, or there had some discussion around what how discrete is that? Is it missing it by a point? Is it missing it by 10 points? Etc. And then we had two principals in the room at that point, and it was them, them saying, "This is when we take it back, because now we can drill this down literally to the classroom to see who, you know, who is where, etc." And that to me is the value of it.
I think that piece is important, but at some level, we have to be comparing ourselves to other districts and know how we're performing, and I mean, we have to look at it from a high level too. I mean, I know that
math assessments we don't.
Well, yeah. we don't have anything else at this point, as
right.
I said earlier. So I'm just trying to say, looking at the data we have, these are my questions.
Just clarification for the
I'm just giving my questions.
I have a question for you, Paul. On the Parkinson's, because we took those. Do those do they compare, are they going to give you data? Because Stephanie wants to be, and I agree with, compared to district.
Yeah, so how do you look at this?
You can't do that with math. And that's the only reason I bring that up, Stephanie, because it's a little, it can kind of get taken out. Amongst us, we talk all this stuff, and you're obviously becoming an expert on it, so you got more knowledge than most people do. So that's why I bring that up, because I just want to be careful, so I'm clear, that math we can't compare to these comparable districts.
But Park, you'll
but
be able to.
But Park, you can.
Yeah, so but we haven't seen it yet
right,
either.
We're
so
get it in the fall,
that's,
though.
So, yeah.
So that's why I wrote that question.
That'll be
that's
that.
Going to be the
but
then,
I'm not comparing to other districts.
You just said that, and you're so eloquent here. So I just wanted to.
Okay, but I'm just, my point is, I know kids can have a bad day or whatever can happen, and test scores can vary. But in my mind, when we should be looking at if every single grade showed a drop in the percentage students meeting their growth targets.
Dark green is four.
Fourth show a drop? Is that? Yeah. It looks like I'm not disagreeing with you overall, but we have two greens in here. Which one did that? Did okay?
No, it looks like it's flat line.
If it's flat.
Yeah. Grade four might have had a slight increase. Sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Four. So that is four. Okay. Your greens are too close for mine.
So I'll but throw these up quick. Let me just try to get through. I'm sorry.
And that's
math. I need to ask a question. Stephanie, I'm sorry. I didn't interrupt. Help me understand where these numbers, and I'm assuming that each line, each break in the line, is from a data point. And just tell me where those data points came from so I can understand.
Those data points came from, the report, the academic update that we had last time, there were...
So you charted what...
I took this data and I plotted it.
Okay, so this is...
I literally just
this
took...
Is district data.
Yes.
And it's percent meeting projection.
I took the percent meeting projection from the data that was presented by Karen before. Mm-hmm. And for example, for this chart, there was like 8 pages, and it showed first grade overtime, second grade overtime, third grade overtime. And I just took it. I just took the data points from the 8 pages, and I plotted it out on a chart.
Thank you.
And some of the issues, if you had like any data, somebody who hit baseball 50 home runs in one season, then he hit 48 the next. 48 is not a good number in this chart because you move from 50 down to 48. Those guys will sign a $25 million contract if they can hit back to about 50-48. So that's something you got to be careful on when you're looking at these lines.
Well, we are looking for, we've been told by that think tank was going to be a game changer. And we would be expecting, as Stephanie said, don't, Joe, let me finish. You get upset when I cut you off.
I'm not sure I was finished with that.
Well, there was a pause. So, the trajectory should be showing growth, continued growth. I mean, that's why we did. That's why we put all the people in this community through what we put through. We should be seeing that. And in the end, there were people that asked repeatedly, "What are our benchmarks?" Prior to this happening, we never got them.
So
when you're done.
So the data, so I understand you're saying.
You don't interrupt me.
No, I just asked. That's why I asked. The think tank is the year where it all went up really high. And then as we continue to implement think tank, or with your thing, PDLs, that's where it slid down. Just so I know. So first saying think tank caused a bad problem, but then I look at your data that's up there, and maybe the math's a bad one to look at for you guys, but. Which doesn't have multi-age, it's really special.
There is
Didn't it jump up a lot with Think Tank?
I know. I'm not trying to make any assumptions about what caused anything to happen. My point is, you saw an increase, but then this past year you saw it drop back to where it was. Why was that?
If you compare it to 2 years ago...
Well, you want a theory on this? I believe that the teachers the first year were in a position that they were under a microscope and were probably working extra hard to do everything they could possibly do to exhaustion to try and make these things work. That can be one theory. I mean, we can come up with several theories on some of this stuff. But the reality is, think tank is still there.
I just want to make sure I understand what you were saying.
Can I just go ahead and realign this? This agenda item We have about 15 minutes left, Stephanie.
Can I just finish going
through my So I want to let Stephanie finish. And here's
I have like thoughts I'd like
I
to
I wanted to decide.
Right. My, the idea behind this, though, my understanding was that you want to make sure you had some clarification on some things. And what I hear you doing is speaking about things, and but do you have questions? I mean,
I
are there
do.
Things?
I just haven't gotten to them.
Okay, so if we can defer to Stephanie and let her finish, then I want to hear the questions, because if that's going to help to inform the board, then that's what I'm listening
I'm
for.
I'm trying to get to my questions, but I need to show you this.
Go ahead.
To inform my questions. I'm trying to do it. I know everyone is trying to do it. I'll try to do it quickly. This one here is showing. Okay. Could you move forward one mic, please? Mm-hmm. So the next one is reading growth by cohort. So this would take, like, for example, the red line took last year's eighth graders and their scores for the past 3 years when they were in seventh grade, sixth grade, fourth grade, if that makes sense. So it's seeing by a cohort. So it's following a group of kids through their years, and the line is showing what grade they were last year. The reading one, actually, in looking at this, in 13-14, all cohorts showed an increase except for fourth grade in a number of students meeting their growth target.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 14-15, there was a slight increase at the elementary level, but there was actually a decrease at the middle school level. So kind of wondering what's happening. You know, my question is what's happening at the middle school level. The next, the last slide is math by cohort. Same thing with a group of students. Last year, their grade level, following them back in time through the years. And in 13-14, third and sixth grade dropped. Everyone else showed an increase. Then in 14-15, all grades but sixth dropped. And some, pretty significantly, the percent of students meeting their growth target. So, you know, and what this is, as I said, I just took the data that was presented. Each of these charts was shown in 8 pages, broken down by grade level with just a number.
Mm-hmm.
I look at things, I'm a very visual person for me. I prefer to see it all of them together, and it's like a chart where I can easily compare what's mm-hmm. happening at a district level. So that's why I didn't create anything new other than what was presented.
Take that eighth grade one, for instance. Mm-hmm. I think what you're doing, though, you're showing one set of data. So let's take for instance reading RIT growth 8th grade, because now we're looking at spring mean RIT 2011-12 219.3 222, just going down 228 232. So you're taking one piece of data where we tried to show a breadth of data to be able to evaluate this work. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure everybody's clear. We're showing one data point.
Right.
Here on our chart, we're showing multiple data. Right. I just want to.
In my mind, I guess, and maybe it's inaccurate, in my mind, you gave a breadth of data, but the most valuable piece of data to me is the percent of students meeting their growth target, because that is set by NWEA. It's unique to our students. All of the other data is just comparing us to the 50%.
I agree with that statement, except when you plot it the way you're plotting it, it's disingenuous, in my opinion, because
it's hard data.
No, the data, you could have a downward movement and be at 70% one time and be at 69% the next time. And 69 is like hitting 48 homers. It's pretty good. It'll get you a really good contract. But you're sitting here lowering by putting a downward arrow from 70 to 69, you could say what you've said, it goes lower. Therefore, but 69, when you look at the absolute percentage increase, is pretty good. And what you want to compare, which is what they've done in other areas, not in your chart, and that's where I think it misses the boat for me, is that what are other people increasing? And if you start plotting that to the national norm, then you have data that I think is a little clearer.
Stephanie, you had some questions.
Sorry.
Okay.
Can we get to those?
If you look, I guess in my mind, looking at the data all across, like the numbers seem to drop and increase. They kind of correlate, but maybe I'm completely wrong about that. But
if you do really well 1 year and you're at a 70% meeting, you're going to have a downward arrow or movement on your line graph, right? If I perform only at 67%.
Right, but right. Okay,
and part of that is that the challenge changes, which we heard too.
The natural average is incredibly well.
Okay, here's my point. One of them is,
I know I keep hearing we can't compare ourselves to local districts with our map. And I understand the logic in that data isn't available to us. But in my mind, then I don't know that it's a tool that we could say, well, we're growing and we're doing amazing. I think it can be used more internally to meet our kids' needs. But it's not really a measurement of how we're doing comparatively with our, you know.
We have the national
with
norm,
other
so.
But we have the national
and here's
norm.
One other thing. And I'm not okay saying we should be above the 50% national average. I feel we should be doing better than that. You know, people behind
that. I think we're 75% of our students are above the national mean.
Right.
When you look
that
at those box and whiskers, I'd say almost without question, we're 75% of our students are above the national mean average. It just going off of
just going off of kids, the percentage of kids meeting their growth target.
Mm-hmm.
You know, percent of kids meeting their growth target, we're down in like the 50% for a lot of them. And I heard, well, as long as we have 50% of our kids meeting our growth target, that's good. And
we're not saying that. NWEA states that.
That was what we were told at the update.
Yeah, and that's what Karen said. She said
she
reached out to NWEA.
But should we have a benchmark as a district? Should we be saying, you know, this isn't an average district. We want 75% of our kids meeting their growth target.
Well, this is exactly the point I think that Mrs. Hornacek and Mr. Samples, who was here that night too, right, our two principals, is that when this data gets taken, which is normed across the nation, right? I mean, and that's a piece of this that's huge. When you norm and you validate over year over year over year, then we're really seeing true information. And what the principal said, which was the kind of the end point to our meeting that night, which I thought was important, is now this data gets taken back and they pull it apart and it gets completely discrete. I mean, I think Paul said this or somebody did, that in fact then teachers, which I think this is the powerful part of it to me, the teachers in the classroom know what their data is. That's how discrete it gets.
And I get that.
And that's the point of using the assessment.
I understand. And I think it's great that we put it in the hands of the teachers, and this is a great tool that they can use to meet their students' needs. But for now, this is the only tool that we have to evaluate ourselves at a district level.
And set new expectations,
and
to your point.
The teachers are not the ones who are setting the curriculum. They're not the ones designing how we're doing things in our district. So somebody has to be evaluating it from that level. And we've added a lot of variables, and I want to know how we're accounting for success and failure. Like, if we looked at things, for example, we have teachers, since we've done specialization the past 2 years, we have teachers that do not specialize because there's an odd number of sections. Next year, we're going to have teachers that don't specialize. Have we done analysis of the student scores from those teachers to see if they're performing better or worse than their counterparts? Is specialization making a difference? First grade is almost kind of like our placebo. They didn't do specialization. They didn't do multi-age. Are we comparing their scores to the rest of the district? First grade had Spanish. I feel like there's ways we could be further evaluating this at a district level, because it's a great tool that principals need to use it, the teachers need to use it, but it is the only tool that we have now to try to evaluate all of these variables that we put into the district to see how things are going.
So I think that we have about 5 more minutes, Stephanie, but I think the points that you're making, I think, for me, translate into two things. Number one is they're really important questions to ask, right? The second part of it is it goes back to that front level, those teachers, to be able to look and say.
Teachers aren't making the district level decisions, Erica.
But Stephanie, we just listened to a Next Generation Science Standard presentation where teachers deconstructed the standards, spent 2 years, and identified the curriculum they want to use, the tools they want to use. So in fact, teachers are making those decisions. They're identifying those things that they're going to use to make a difference in the classroom.
So we had a teacher task force formed that planned out our implementation of how we were going to do PBLs.
Yeah, it works with CIT.
My question is, how are we truly evaluating this? We walked away from the... I'm just concerned that we walked away from the last meeting with, we're growing. Kids grow to year to year. my concern is we walked away with that. I want to see. There were tons of comments in the survey a year and a half ago. We haven't done a survey since.
That's happening in just another month.
I understand, but we have no other data. Okay. Yeah. What are we doing to evaluate that?
We're getting park data.
The bottom line is our kids are involved in this, and we're moving forward, and we're being told ongoing into year three that we don't really have a way to measure this. And that to me is ludicrous. That is what we're being told. We don't really have a way to measure this. Yeah. So other than maybe that we're going to drill down on some of this stuff, and it's back to, sorry, but we got elected here to hold this accountable. Maybe you weren't, Joe, but I know holding things accountable. I'm gonna take 1 second, and I brought this up with Dr. Gordon. In our annual report, he states, our students are performing better than ever. I want that backed up at some point, because that's a big state, better than ever, better than this school district when it started in time to now. That's what we put in. That's what our stakeholders read, and there's absolutely no basis for that.
Well, when you go back to the data that's been up there, and when you look at the 2 year chunks of time,
a 2 year chunk. Okay.
Well, that's what we've done the last 2 years. It's a way to look at the data.
But
you want to look
year,
at
the last year, the scores dropped. That, when you that look means at the year before.
Did the scores drop or the percentage median drop?
I know from our data. Please stop interrupting me.
Go ahead.
You've asked me not to interrupt people, and you've done it repeatedly.
Go ahead.
At the end, last year to the year before, based on the data that we have here, the numbers, other than we've decided fourth grade flatline, the numbers dropped. We have a superintendent that puts in our annual report that the constituents that read here, that they read, that they got, says our students are performing better than ever. That is not a fact. That is maybe his opinion. It is not backed up by fact. And I'm sorry that I get a little irritated by these televangelist statements that we somehow make around here that, you know, they're
so disrespectful.
Kurt, please.
I want these kinds of things backed up.
Kurt, please. I want to thank Stephanie for the time she put into putting these together. We have in this district administrators whose profession it is to work with the organizations, NWEA in this case. We specifically, like many districts in the area, our sister and brother districts that we talk about, use MAP assessment because it is a nationally normed and validated and revalidated tool over time. So I think that Dr. Gordon has, in his 2 years, is making that statement in the time that he's been here and looking at the data that we have, that Karen showed us and also provided to us. You made your point, Stephanie. I think it's important.
I have a few other things I'd like to say. My time is up for me. I have a couple other things I would like to say. As I said, we keep talking about math. We don't have any other data. As I mentioned earlier, we did the benchmarking study for 11-12 and 12-13. We didn't do it for 13-14. Maybe we should to see how we looked in 13-14. We had ISAT scores. I know the article that came out in the Trib that I brought forward when I was sitting out there to a board meeting showed that our ISAT scores actually were dropping while surrounding districts were increasing. We've never done anything with that.
And that was also the time when cut scores changed.
But
I mean, there were two or three areas.
Increase, right. And we saw a decrease.
So what's your desire in this step? What are you looking at?
I want to understand why are we seeing. I mean, it wasn't just a drop in the percent of students meeting projection. The percent of projection also dropped across the board. Why? So why did it go up in 13-14 and go down in 14-15? I would just like some analysis of the data. When we wrapped up the presentation in June, we just left it at we're growing. I'm just asking for analysis.
Those two points are correlated. Of course they move together. It's the absolute RIT scores, too, that are going up that you're ignoring. I don't want to get into the statistical debate because you're manipulating the data.
I'm not manipulating the data. I'm just looking at the data that's presenting. But the RIT scores, you can't just look at a RIT score.
What I would like to suggest is that
you know, questions are fair any time around measurement and assessment. So I'd like to close this discussion and follow up.
One point I'd like to make, please. I would like to ask about the achievement gap. I'm trying to get through my questions.
Yep.
I keep getting interrupted.
Well, we're allowed to talk to
you. So the achievement gap, I know we don't, I asked for historical data. I think I'd like to see it on ELL, special ed, and FRL kids as well, because, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do is narrow the achievement gap. And I could be wrong about this, but it's my understanding is that we don't have access to data beyond the past 2 years, which is a concern to me, because we basically have no data pre-specialization or multi-age. So how are we going to know if we're reaching these students if we don't have the historical data?
And you're talking about special education?
ELL. I think we should also look at FRL. I had asked to see the past 4 or 5 years, and I was told we can only go past the past 2 years.
Did they give you a reason why?
It was in the explanation that Eric has in front of her. So I think, you know, it's a concern of mine if we have no historical data, and one of the things we're trying to do is narrow our achievement gap. We need to be able to look at data of those subsets of students. I don't know that math is that reliable even for those subset of students, but the little bit of data that I saw, a significant number of the percentage of students meeting their growth targets dropped from 13-14 to 14-15 for those subsets of students.
Well, and the subsets that we saw for special education in ELL, and I understand that these are small subsets, so this is back to Paul's point about districts not wanting to present this publicly because it can be cohort groups that are very small, and we want to, and certainly there's a confidentiality around it as well.
Well, I guess my big thing is, I know
what
I
are the tools? How are we measuring?
We're limited on the data that we have right now and the tools that we have, but I want there to be evaluation. I don't want it to just be like, okay, we're growing, everything's great, because I'm not hearing everything is great, and I honestly think at this point, we're talking about the survey. I don't even know if we should even do a survey this fall. I feel like to do one in the fall, we can't make any changes for this school year. If we're going to go through the expense, would it make more sense to wait and do it in March so you can have another year of data?
There were multiple reasons for the survey in the fall, and it was, as I remember you asking, to get a pulse for how are we starting out the year.
We never said anything about the fall. That's been directed by you.
Yeah. Can I make a question or have a question about the survey?
Quickly, and then we'll close.
This is different now, because I'm kind of hearing now, and you rethought it, and you think the spring's better, or I misinterpreted that.
No, we never. We always want.
No, as soon as possible is what you said before. So, and it wasn't. No, as soon as you want. Let me finish.
Go ahead. Joe, finish, and then we'll close.
I think at this point, the one thing that would be good is to get the expert and I think it's Bill Foster or one of his counterparts, to explain what his approach would be to our next survey. Because maybe he concurs with Stephanie and Kurt here that it's best to do March
21st. I'll talk with him.
No, I think it should be every, so the public hears it too. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's a cost to our district, to having them come here, we have to spend it. But that's what we need to make sure we put the best survey out.
Well, that was the outreach to Paul last year, at the end of the academic year, and we got that feedback from Bill Foster.
But I think we need it. What I'm saying is, I agree, because it was an 18-month thing. We went through this. I mean, when we hired him to do this, this was kind of planned, so we were following the plan.
Mm-hmm.
That
was his recommendation,
He had his recommendation. But what I'm hearing here is, even though that's what we've been told, there's a feeling amongst Stephanie and Kirk, they just say that that's not the ideal time. And maybe they can persuade
him. Well, he's the expert, so we can ask him. That's what he does for a living.
And at least
that's why we hire experts.
The public should hear this, you know, their questions, which are good questions.
The questions about measurement and all that, I think, are that if that's the kind of the end result of this, I think they're important questions. There's no, I don't disagree.
Well,
so,
I like Joe's idea to have the survey company come and talk to us, so we can talk about it a little more. Because I do not, I never agree.
I hope it's not the last one you like to mind. I think it's important for the public to hear, because you guys were on the board when we did all that, and they're very good questions we have.
Yeah, and Bill had he did a full report on that as well. So
I think it's worth the expense if you guys
Who closed? Drew?
I could be very
Quick question? Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a quick question. You know, I'm looking at all this data points. I'm looking at the charts, and I want to really understand what they're telling me. And I don't know if something that they, when Karen, when you gave your report, you said this went up, this went down, and my question to you would, why? Something went up, something down. What was causing that? And maybe that's beyond us. And maybe there's a science to this that we're missing, that maybe some of the bigger districts use to, you know, discern what this information tells us.
Well, there are some districts that actually have, District, I think, 204 is one of them, assistant superintendents for analytics and psychometrics. And that's what they do. And they use math. And they use it as their validated tool. And they deconstruct from that. They don't take the cohorts and build it onto another. They just operate directly from that. He spoke at a IASB dinner meeting one evening. So, you know, there are specialists in this, and this is the way they look at it. So,
could we have him talk to us?
The board has to direct Paul to do that.
Okay,
we
I'm
feel
sorry.
Like that's important. But, you know, Stephanie, I think, has asked a lot of good questions. I think that some of these questions were answered in June, in my opinion. And I also don't think we left that meeting feeling like everything is rosy. In fact, you know, again, it was the principals that said it's our job now to take this and really drill down, because this is a student-by-student unique opportunity. And I trust that that's the work that they do.
So thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me, Jennifer.
Just one point I want to mention. I agree that, you know, the teachers are the ones who are working with the data and working with the students directly.
Right.
And, you know, that we ask them for input after, you know, a year of working through some significant changes. And I don't know that, I mean, as far as I understand, nothing was done with that input. We never saw an update at a board meeting to the teacher comments on the survey. So I think that needs, their priority needs to be placed on that and taking that seriously.
I think that's why the board decided to do that, to do a survey right away in the fall.
We did plenty with that.
Yeah.
We slowed down multi-age.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. It was directly as a result of that. And it was all the one-to-one meetings that Paul and Karen had as well. There was definitely changes that were made as a result.
But there was other comments on the survey that...
About kindergarten, there was thousands of comments, and we looked at those comments, and those are the pieces that...
I thought when I asked the team, how were the comments addressed? Were the comments addressed by Team 21? I was told no. So I'm just going off of that information. It was my understanding that Team 21 was going to take and vet all those issues, and then when I asked, I was told no, they didn't. So maybe that was
there were aspects of that that Team 21 took on, and then went back, and it was through BLTs and gathering data during from building leadership teams. There were any number of things, and I'm, you know what, I'll pull those reports because I have those.
Okay.
All right. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed sessions to discuss?
Do we have another matter?
We
still have other matters. Where are my missiles?
No, that was it.
They're not on the agenda,
right.
But I have something.
Adjourned. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session to discuss the appointment?
Aren't we allowed to bring up other matters?
There is another matter.
Can we do that after closed session, though? Because we have an attorney here, we're paying for him to be here. So I think it's wiser to go to closed session, then come out and discuss any other matters you want.
I'd appreciate...
Saving our taxpayers
money.
Then we're asking our taxpayers to save it. So maybe we should...
Stephanie, could we have these moved to August 24th?
It's very quick. It'll take about 1 minute.
Go right ahead.
1 minute. The one thing I would like to do is ask the board that we add the discussion about public participation. I know we had a lot of comments at the June meeting about reevaluating how we handle that. I'd like to add that to the next board meeting agenda for discussion.
Okay. August 24th.
Do I eat my...
Yes.
So I brought this, I touched on this and asked the question at the last meeting about the board self-evaluation. I was given the OMA guidelines, and in there I was said that it has to be in closed session, but the guidelines do not say that. The self-evaluation, it says may be conducted in closed session. So what I'd like to see is some consensus, I guess that's what we can ask for.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem with doing it in open session. I believe that in being transparent, we should be doing it that way. In fact, if we brought in an outside firm to do it, we would have to do it in open session, and that's to the guidelines. It's only because we're using the association rep that we may conduct it in closed session. So my opinion is we should be, in the efforts of being transparent. I have no issues with discussing any feelings I have about anything or anybody in open session. So I think that we should be, if we continue to talk about being a transparent board, we should do the self-evaluation in open session.
Thank you.
Are we gonna, can we vote on that? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
Yes, for consensus.
Is there a consensus to change our August 20th meeting to an open session meeting?
I'd like to review what Kurt just, before I give my opinion, because I don't know what he's referring to.
This is the meeting that we
have. No, I know that. I mean the code thing. Like I don't.
If you read it, it says a self-evaluation meeting.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to read the taking that context is a dangerous thing. So
I'd like to understand what best practices and understand what is the what are the benefits and the negatives of doing it differently.
You know, best practice for boards, especially boards that have come together and are on some level still reorganizing, is to be able to have time with their field service director. In this case, it's Barb Toney. To have closed session discussion around how we operate, how we work together, et cetera. I think it's a really, there's very rare time when boards can come together and have an opportunity to have that kind of open and honest discussion. And I think personally, because I've been through, probably six of them now, it's an opportunity for boards to be able to really identify issues, concerns, areas that they want to talk about, and do it in a way that you can have facilitation by a professional development specialist from the IASB. You're elected to a board of education, and I think there's great value in being able to do it as a team.
But
so
we could
certainly
do all those things in open session. I didn't say that we couldn't bring that in. I just said...
It's a different tone. It's a different tenor.
Why is it a different tone? We're transparent. Are we not there? I mean, are we transparent or are we not transparent?
We can do a board report afterwards to talk about all those things. I think there's great value in coming together as professionals with your field service director.
In an open session?
Yeah.
It doesn't say that you have to do it that way.
In our ability to have closed session. That's my opinion on it.
And if we had an outside company conduct some sort of evaluation, it couldn't occur in closed session. The only reason we're allowed to do it is because...
Well, we use the IASB because, in fact, we're a board of education, and it's that's their expertise.
Well, it's an association that we pay dues to. It's a professional association.
What's the cost of doing it through the IASB?
Have a look at the cost.
What's the cost of doing it through a private... third party.
No idea.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. But the point is, when you use the IASB, what you're doing is using the experience of a professional association that directs school code, board, code of conduct, oath of office, all those issues that are important. So is there a consensus to change our plan for the 20th?
I think given that it's the 20th, I say stay the same. And if after review of the specifics that Kurt presented, we could always have another one. And if it's a third party, if you guys feel that's a lot better and it's a consensus to do that, and the cost is minimal, then we can consider that in another.
Well, we're not. Don't mix up the third party part of it. We're just saying that if it was a third party, you'd have to do it in open session.
Okay.
If it's created through the association. I mean, they're not the sheriff. They're just an association that we pay dues to. They may conduct it. The board may conduct it.
I just again want to clarify, because we did have this discussion a couple years ago. The IASB is a specialist in school board governance, and that's why we use them. It'd be like any other professional development that our faculty go out to, our administrators, us professionally in any of our work. You go and you work with the association, with the group,
that is has the expertise, and that's why we use them.
I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying we should use them in open session. I'm not arguing that point. You keep going back and talking semantics about something that...
I wanted to clarify because you made it sound like anybody could do this work and the
ISB... Well, there are certainly outside consultants that must be able to do it because it's in the OMA code. There must be boards within the state that go to outside consultants to do it. They're an association. You're speaking in semantics about trying to move off the topic, which the topic is open or closed session.
I took an oath of office
to be transparent. It's not a must do, it is a may, and I'm gonna go ahead and I'll give it a thumbs up that we should be doing it in open session in the efforts of being transparent to the public that we serve.
I'll give it a thumbs up.
Okay. You want to continue with the 20th, Joe?
Yeah, I want to continue with the 20th plan. I mean, this midnight hour thing. I think it's a bad practice.
Again, we've not had any discussion about this.
Public record now, yeah. And out in the open. So
we're trying to have discussion now.
I would appreciate it since we're 2 weeks away if we had some discussion.
I am happy to still finish my thoughts.
I was told it was
I'm happy to finish my thoughts.
But you're making a statement.
I'm still happy to finish my thoughts.
Let's finish.
I'm happy to look at that in the near future to do it in an open session with the appropriate either third party or SAB representative. But we have set this we're a week away. Is it a week away? I think we continue.
Are we changing the cake that we're bringing or something? I mean, what's the difference?
Patrick,
excuse me. Patrick?
No, I say we stay where we are, and it's a question that you ask for a facilitator.
Okay.
We got a crowd
out
there.
Stay where we are? What do you want?
Yeah. Stand up too?
I mean, I'm not adverse to this, but I'd really want to understand kind of best practices, what other districts are doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd really want to research and understand it. And I don't know that we have enough time to do that.
Okay.
Not that I'm adverse to it. I just,
thank you.
I don't think we had enough time.
And I've made my opinion. All right. Thank you.
I'll make a motion to go to closed sessions. I think you already started that.
Thank you.
Second.
The appointment to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. We had a motion by Mr. Bochensky. Who seconded?
Patrick.
Mr. Escalante. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mr. Buckles?
No.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. The board will not be taking action when it returns from closed session. Thank you very much. Okay, back in open session at 12:14 a.m. on August 10th, 2015. Do I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Motion.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Bochensky, Mr. Ellis. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you.